Merkel, the former long-term Chancellor of Germany, she was in an interview and she let it slip that she thinks they'll still be fighting, Ukraine and Russia will still be fighting that war in 10 years' time. They want it to keep it going. The military-industrial complex are cashing in. They're having an opportunity to test all battlefield weapons real time, and they're loving it. But, I mean, it is actually NATO that's fighting Russia. It's not Ukraine. When we have been firing, UK have been firing Storm Shadow missiles for 2.5 years with UK technicians out of our missiles, out of Ukraine, into Russia. And the French have been doing the same with the Scalps, and you Americans, you've been doing the same with your Attackums.
We gave them, I believe, $350 billion, but let's say it's something less than that, but it's a lot. And we have to equalize with Europe because Europe has given a very much smaller percentage than that. I think Europe has given $100 billion and we've given, let's say, 300 plus. And it's more important for them than it is for us. We have an ocean in between and they don't.
Or Europe manufacture missiles, American missiles.
They would like to be able to do that. We'll take a look at it. They have asked about it.
I mean, how can you say we're not at war with Russia when, if Russia occupied or had a deal with Scotland and they were put their missiles into Scotland and were firing them at London, I think we'd say we're at war with Russia. We're in exactly that situation. Russia do not want to have a war with Europe or NATO. They've only got 144 million people. The combined population of NATO countries is 975 million. Russia's already the largest country in the world. They've got between $70 and $90 trillion of identified natural resources. That's the reason that the BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street want NATO to engage in a war with Russia.
And let me just stop you and back you up. They said our new business model is a wartime economy. It'll last 20 or 30 years. We will win the conventional war. We don't think Russia will ever go nuclear. And then we will break Russia up in five parts. That is Napoleonic. It's Hitlerian. And now they're back again saying it. And so, and I agree with you, we've got 900 million people. And then,
and Alex, we've done all this before. In 1991, when we told the Russians that, or the Soviet Union, let us have East Germany and let us reunify Germany. We'll never move EU and NATO an inch east of there. We've moved 1,000 miles since. What did we end up with in East Germany? We ended up with a lot of old Soviet weapons, enormous. They were sent to Yugoslavia in 1991. That's what created the war in Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia was a competitor organization to the European Union and NATO. We destroyed those countries. And then we picked apart and took what we wanted. We balkanized them in the Balkans.
Germany had free LNG and gas and energy with Angela Merkel and Putin. They were like this. I hope you don't edit this out. They were best friends until 2014. And there was a CIA coup d'etat in Kiev with Victoria Nuland. Look it up. And then it was Biden and Burisma and profit and money laundering.
So we took Croatia and Slovenia into NATO and the EU pretty quickly. We've had Montenegro since, and we blame the Serbs for it. The EU and NATO, we created that war in the Balkans. And if you remember, we bombed Belgrade for many, many months. There's no way they could fight back against us. We're not wearing the white hats in this, Alex, and I'm ashamed of what part we've played in wars in Europe.
They thought they could silence us. They thought they could drive us off the air. They failed. We are back, stronger, louder, unbroken. Find the feeds, hear the broadcast, share the signal at alexjoneslive.com. alexjoneslive.com. We've only...
This is an emergency transmission from FEMA Region 6 in occupied... is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
Alex Jones is back. The info war continues at alexjoneslive.com. And you can follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Plus, you can download the app, alexjonesapp.com. So check it out now and let the deep state globalists know we will never be silenced.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Friday afternoon. Hope you're all doing well. Share that link, alexjoneslive.com. alexjoneslive.com is how you find us. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today here at the end of the week. We're going to open up the phone lines for your calls as well, so we can get your input on the state of the world and where it is. Of course, the ongoing reaction to Donald Trump's MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, and of course, Israel's reaction has been to do everything it can to destroy the MOU. They're obviously not big fans of it. And, you know, there's the way it's being perceived and the way it's actually happening. The way it's being perceived, the way they're trying to put it across, is as if Israel's actions in Lebanon are a matter of existential importance, is a life and death situation, which they are compelled, they are required, it's not up to them. They're being attacked, they gotta fight back. They're doing that, and they're doing it in the best way they know how, and darn it, President Trump is telling them they have to tie their hands behind their back, and this is so unfair. The number one, the first stipulation of the Memorandum of Understanding between Iran and America was the territorial sovereignty and integrity of Lebanon. It's the first thing on the list. In response to this, Israel has not just continued operations in Lebanon. They have expanded them massively in the last 24 hours. So this is not a matter of Donald Trump asking them politely to stop, them saying, look, we're in this battle. We gotta keep fighting. I'm sorry, but you know, what do you expect, to let our troops die? We're not going to let that happen. This is them deliberately doing the opposite of what Donald Trump requested. I mean, this is a signal to all of us, but to Donald Trump in particular, of, oh, you don't want us to attack Lebanon? We're going to attack Lebanon more than we ever have before. We're going to launch 20 different airstrikes across the region. We're going to slaughter dozens of people for absolutely no purpose. You don't want us to do this? Guess what we're going to do more than we've ever done before. And I think this is the clearest signal so far as to the actual relationship between Israel and America. It's not even that they want to help us or that they're trying to be good allies. Even strategically, you would think if, you know, they're sitting there going, gee, America sure looks like it's turning on us a little bit. Maybe now would be the time to pump the brakes just a touch, you know? Show some goodwill. Go, hey, we still got to operate in Lebanon, but all right, no more, you know, major strikes for a week. Can we pause for a week just to give the Americans, you know, some ability to point to us and go, see, look, they're working with us. They're trying. It is the opposite. They are literally lashing out and killing Lebanese people just because we asked them to stop. Just because it is a component of the Memorandum of Understanding, because it is a necessary prerequisite to any form of peace, that's why they're doing it. They're bragging about it. again, you would think, like has happened, you know, a couple times before, but you would think that Donald Trump saying, you know, you're not going to attack Lebanon, you know, Israel's going to have to stop doing that. I mean, actually coming out and saying, like, you don't need to take down a whole apartment building to kill one Hezbollah guy. There's not even Hezbollah in there. You're just murdering people at this point. Again, you would think, even if just for their own self-interest, even in just to put across the idea that they're not just absolutely opposed to us and actually our enemies, you would think they would just withhold like any egregious actions in Lebanon for like a couple hours. Maybe, I mean, I said a week earlier, can we get a couple days? No, you may not. Lebanon says Israeli strikes kill 47, as Israel says, four soldiers killed by Hezbollah. And this is the crazy thing, folks. They're mad that their soldiers are being killed while actively invading a foreign nation. What? What do they think is going to happen? What do you think this situation is? You're saying it's a bad thing that Hezbollah is defending themselves? Lebanon has a right to defend itself. Could we use that phrase? Lebanon has a right to defend itself. They literally, and this is from Benjamin Netanyahu, posted in Hebrew, as I instructed. He's like, I'm the one that said this. As I instructed, the IDF struck powerfully 150 Hezbollah targets in Lebanon and eliminated dozens of terrorists. So Trump signs a memorandum of understanding yesterday, right? Or was it, you know, day before? The next day, and the memorandum of understanding has the territorial of integrity as the first stipulation. The next day, Israel does not just continue their operations in Lebanon. They massively ramp them up. And Netanyahu starts tweeting out, I said to do this. 150 spots in Lebanon, probably the biggest attack on Lebanon of this entire conflict, just so happens to come the day after President Trump politely asked them to withhold bombing Lebanon just a little bit so we can get peace established. They don't want peace. They're doing it on purpose. Don't know how much more clear it could be. They're not even doing it in a way that could even possibly be characterized as necessary for their survival or as a defensive measure. Yeah, Israel and they have to go 5 minutes without bombing civilians. I mean, genuinely, what explains this? What explains this? Why are they trying to antagonize us? What is the strategy? I mean, I get the doctrine of severity, right? I get this idea that, like, I don't know, they feel as though you let one 19-year-old Cornell student, you know, dislike Jews, then the world ends. So, you know, you have to move heaven and earth to punish people for it. But, like, what the hell? What the hell? I'm in shock at how brazen Israel is. That they don't. I mean, I understand they're not going to capitulate. I never thought they were going to withdraw from Lebanon totally. But I also really am struggling to understand the strategy of doubling and tripling down on something that has no strategic value whatsoever. They are not eliminating Hamas with these bombings. They're not even really pretending to eliminate Hamas. Like they say, oh, we bombed 150 Hamas, or I'm sorry, Hezbollah safe houses, whatever they say, and killed dozens of terrorists. When it's revealed who the targets are, some of the people that they're killing, like one of them, they just destroyed an apartment building, killed the man's 4-year-old daughter. He's a member of the Lebanese army. For some reason, they had him in their AI database as a Hezbollah member, so they slaughtered his family, including his daughter. Like, strategically, what do you think happens from that point on? What do you think happens when you had somebody who previously was not aligned with Hezbollah, who was in the Lebanese army that is not fighting Israel? Well, you just killed his daughter and his wife, I think you just recruited another soldier for Hezbollah, you absolute morons. What the hell are they thinking? Like, what, genuinely, what are they, is this honestly just rubbing our noses in it? Like, is that what this is? When you rub your dog's nose in the mess they made, that they're like, it's like, is this literally just pure humiliation? Power projection? Is that it? It's just that they're offended by the idea that we might ask for some consideration from them. They're offended and they're outraged at the very concept that we might ever ask them for anything. Hey, could you do us a favor and just not kill a bunch of civilians for a couple days? And that is such an outrageous imposition on them that they're like, you know what? We're going to kill everyone. We're going to kill more people than we ever have before. We're going to brag about it. We are going to spit in your face, because who do you think you are to ask us to do anything? Like, that is the mindset that we're dealing with here. They're demons, people. Like, I don't know what else to, I don't know how else to characterize it. They're like crazy. They're like actually crazy. Again, you know, just, I mean, it's just, yeah, they're all a bunch of Jonathan Pollards. I mean, that's sort of the idea that I'm getting here. And again, it's like, I don't know, man. It's one of those things. I genuinely can't even like come up with a better metaphor than what is that just actually happening. But it really is, you know, it's like, have you ever read The Giving Tree? Have you ever read The Giving Tree, story about the tree that just gives of itself endlessly to a little boy that never seems to repay anything? This is like if we were the giving tree, and it's like, oh, bombs, it's all yours. Money to buy the bombs, please take ours. You need white phosphorus to drop on civilian populations? We have plenty. Take it all. You can have the money and the blood, the lives of our children. Sure. Take a dozen of them. Why not? It's all for you. You get whatever you want, whenever you want. Oh, TikTok, people are talking bad about you. Can we buy it for you, please? How about we force China? How about we accept 600,000 Chinese students in exchange for forcing them to give you what you want? How about we just give you absolutely everything we possibly can at your demand, never asking anything in return? And it'd be like watching The Giving Tree and watching the story of this selfless organism giving of itself for whatever they could possibly need. Only at the end of this story, the tree is, it's a stump and it's dying and it's spent all of its life force serving the little boy. And the tree maybe says, little boy, could you maybe water me once? Could you do me a favor and just pour a single glass of water on my roots, please? And the boy is like, what the hell is, how dare you? Who do you think you are? I'm calling the stump removal company immediately. I'm going to burn you down. Like that's where we're at, is everything. They get everything they want. We give them everything we possibly can. In return, we merely ask them politely, please stop doing gigantic bombing raids on Lebanon for like couple days. It's sort of like the course of human history we're trying to establish. Like if things keep going as they're going, the entire economy crashes and billions of people are going to die and things are going to get crazy. Could you do us a favor and just not kill people for like couple hours? And their response is to do bigger and more damaging raids than they ever have launched against Lebanon before. That is their response to our mere suggestion that they might possibly do a favor for us. Yeah, see, it needs a different ending. The tree was happy. Now, then and the tree dared. The great giving tree dared to possibly request a minor inconvenience from the boy. And the boy decided to burn the tree down. So, I think Israel needs to be destroyed. I mean, I think I've figured it out. I think I figured out what the problem is here. Think I figured out what is causing all of the problems. Yeah, we the tree need to have a very severe talking to the little boy that we support endlessly. As instructed, the IDF struck powerfully 150 Hezbollah targets and eliminated dozens of terrorists. Benjamin Netanyahu at 9:13 a.m. today. So, you know, you can ask, you can request, you can politely suggest that they do something. We gotta wrap our minds around. We have to understand who it is we're dealing with here. They are making it abundantly clear. So this is the sort of the crisis moment. I mean, obviously Iran has not responded because throughout all of this and from the very beginning, might I say, and please, anybody with any evidence to the contrary, debunk me at your will. Please tell me I'm wrong when I say that in this entire conflict, and frankly, for the last several years, Iran has shown itself to be far and away incomparably more merciful, more thoughtful, more reasonable, easier to work with. I mean, everything I see out of Iran seems to be the truth. That's just how it is. Everything I see out of Israel is a lie. Every time there is a development that increases the danger across the world, every time there is a senseless, violent attack, it's Israel doing it. And every time Iran shows restraint that I personally would not be able to maintain. It was one of the most fascinating things about this entire conflict 111 days ago when it first started. It became abundantly clear that for the last 3 years, Iran has sat back and has allowed Israel to behave in the most aggressive and belligerent way to all of its neighbors. And it has not responded, and it has not flexed its muscle, and it has not joined the war in a way that it could have. I mean, especially in the first, you know, couple of weeks of the Gaza conflict after October 7th, everything was crazy. Israel was tied down in the south. It would have been a very simple thing for Iran to go, hey, look, they're vulnerable. All hands on deck. All of our proxies, all attack right now. Take them out. Drive them out. Murder them. They didn't do that. Now, sort of the assumption was, or the implication was from the people that were covering this, was that that was because of how strong Israel is and how weak Iran is. It was from Awesome Jew. Now that much of the world has turned against Israel, it's time for Israel to act like a superpower. Jesus Christ. Build independent media military strength, develop the most advanced weapons on earth, stop seeking approval from hostile nations, take back the Sinai, reassert control over southern Lebanon, open the economy, slash taxes, attract global capital, and become a tax haven, show strength, show resolve, show dominance. You ever stop to think, maybe Iran should have a nuke. Maybe we should give Iran a nuke. There's a certain level of belligerence and insanity that Israel and the Jewish diaspora on display there. Awesome Jew is not an Israeli. He's an American. He's a patriotic American, right? Again, just think about what we're actually dealing with here. Vice President J.D. Vance has become a complete disgrace. I've never heard such hostile anti-Israel rhetoric from a sitting vice president. Zooming out, taking a look at what's actually happening here. Israel is just trying to take over its neighbors. and merely asking them to stop is enough for them to turn on you and want to kill you as well. And it doesn't matter if their entire existence up until this point and continuing today, their entire existence depends completely on us. They are a parasite. Do you understand that? They are a colony of ticks that live off our lifeblood. This is Ben Gavir. For every tear of an Israeli mother, 1,000 Lebanese mothers must weep. All of Lebanon must burn. For every tear of an Israeli mother, 1,000 Lebanese mothers must weep. All of Lebanon must burn. I mean, genuinely, the only thing I can comprehend this by is like, they really are trying to make everybody hate them, aren't they? They really are doing everything they can to prove themselves to be irredeemably evil in the eyes of absolutely everybody. And as J.D. Vance pointed out yesterday, and we played the clip, when he said, Donald Trump is the only world leader that is even on your side anymore. And by the way, that's only because the blackmail rings and the other corruption that this group engages in. He's the only one. He's the only world leader right now that I don't even know if he likes them, but is tolerating Israel. And their response to the reality they put Trump in, they've ruined his presidency. They've hijacked the Republican Party and driven it into the ground for their sake. He has given all of this to them willingly. Now we're in a situation where the fate of America, the fate of certainly his presidency, certainly the fate of the midterms, the factual mathematical reality on the ground right now is that this conflict cannot continue. The oil reserves are running dry. The economy will enter a feedback loop spiral from which it will not recover if this conflict isn't ended. It's not even a choice Trump is making. It's a reaction to reality. It is a created situation that they helped to manufacture. So it's not like Trump is just choosing. It's not like he all of a sudden decided to turn against Israel. The facts on the ground are we cannot continue to operate this way. And again, the response from Israel is to spit in his face, to double down on the attacks on Lebanon, to launch larger and more aggressive attacks than perhaps we've ever seen before, for Netanyahu to come out and brag about being the one to order it, and for people like Ben Gavir to say, we're going to kill 1,000 Lebanese people for every one Jew they make sad. What is going on? It's the only question I can possibly ask. What the hell is going on? What is going on with these psychopath idiot retards that run our world and should all be forcibly removed from power? And what the hell is wrong with Trump that they will do this to him and that he won't respond in kind? This is the perfect time, the perfect chance to cut them off and let their neighbors devour them. Please?
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its businesses?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there. But there are dozens and dozens of countries that have experienced it. And, of course, you have countries that have gone bankrupt like 6 or 7 times. I mean, not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else. Yeah. And I've always hoped that, you know, the U.S. never does it. But we are not immune from it happening.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So the implications of that are bond market is toast because the value of bonds, the price of bonds comes down as interest rates rise. The inverse is also true. When interest rates come down, the value of bonds goes up. So as you raise interest rates, the value of bonds comes down. Who's allocated into bonds? The bond market is way larger than the equity market, the stock market. So you've got pension funds that are allocated into bonds, right? Anybody that's on a fixed income, banks are allocated into bonds. Consider this, an insurance company. Most insurance companies across the country are allocated about 90% into the bond market with their internal portfolios. What does an insurance company do? It pays beneficiaries when people die, right? So if the asset that they have to sell to pay those beneficiaries is coming down in price, this is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything, and on the banking system.
And let's be clear, though, a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed.
Yeah, because that was our get-out-of-jail-free card, right? We could print as much money as we want, and everybody around the world still needed the U.S. dollar. If you don't have reserve currency status like every other country, other than the one that has reserve currency status, when you print excessively, people no longer want your currency. Don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. So you can roll over your IRAs. You have an old 401k, roll that over. Your brokerage accounts, take delivery of it at home or store it at a depository. If you don't want to take delivery of it at home, we'll walk you through that, answer your questions, make sure that you feel comfortable with everything, because it's ultimately your decision. We're just here to help guide and go on this journey with you. 1,000-ounce bars of silver, 100-ounce bars, 10-ounce bars, or 1-ounce generic refinery rounds.
But then you can roll over the financial instruments, too.
1-ounce gold bars or kilo bars, IRAs. If it has IRA in the name, simple, SEP, Roth, traditional, inherited, we can do that. Or you can do just a brokerage account that you just wire as funds, and it's a non-IRA account.
Is it wholesale? And are they buying it back with no cost? No fee. This is the place to go. And we'll get into gold and silver as well. Better Kirk Elliott, KEPM.com/gold. That way they know it comes from us. So it supports the broadcast, KEPM.com/gold, or 720-605-3900, 720-605-3900. Call and get a free consultation or sign up for email. They'll call you back. They can also roll over a lot of financial instruments. This is the place to go, KEPM.com/gold. So gold and silver is the way to go, the best investment the last 2+ years. And you can just check the wholesale price every day. That's what you get it for. You sell it back. For no cost, nobody else of any size does that. That's real.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. It looks like things are changing rapidly in the Middle East. Or they're staying the same rapidly. It's the same chaos. From AlexJonesLive.com, 10 minutes ago. Israel and Hezbollah agree to new ceasefire in Lebanon as Iran peace deal hangs in the balance. Okay. Only in the Middle East. Only in the Middle East do you go from the prime minister saying, "We've launched the largest attack we ever have, 150 targets. We will destroy them completely. We will make all of their mothers die." Then they're like, "And also we have a peace deal and we're doing a ceasefire." What? On Friday, Israeli ambassador to the United States, Michael Leiter, said that the Jewish state and Hezbollah will observe a ceasefire in Lebanon. President Donald Trump's Iran peace deal is contingent upon Israel halting their attack on Lebanon. Despite the reassurance that the offensive will stop, U.S. intelligence agencies are warning the president that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will likely take steps to prevent his Iran peace deal from succeeding. In a social media post on the Israeli ambassador to the U.S. said, "Israel remains firmly committed to an immediate ceasefire. At 11:30 this morning, Israel halted all offensive operations. Hezbollah and Iranian claims to the contrary are bold lies." Okay, well, what about Benjamin Netanyahu's phrase to the contrary? What? What is going on? What is happening? I don't understand. They're like, don't listen to those Iranians and those Hezbollah people saying they're being attacked. That's crazy. Meanwhile, Benjamin Netanyahu is putting out tweets about how they bombed 150 sites and killed dozens of terrorists. What? Okay. Am I missing something? I'm confused by this. Israel wants our neighbor to the north, Lebanon, with which we have relations dating back to King Solomon and King Hiram, to prosper and enjoy democratic freedoms. King Solomon, right? Okay. Okay. This will only happen when Hezbollah, a murderous Iranian proxy, is destroyed. The end of Hezbollah will mark the beginnings of a beautiful peace between our two countries. You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see a comparison between the number of civilians killed comparing the IDF and Hezbollah. Because as far as I can tell, there was one time, I think it was in 2024, when a Hezbollah missile was claimed to have landed on some Druze people in the Golan Heights. And actually there was some confusion as to whether that was a Hezbollah missile or whether it was an interceptor or whether it was an interceptor that hit a missile and the missile fell. I never really got to the bottom of that. And Hezbollah came out and apologized and basically said, you know, this was unintentional. It was a error on the part of the, missile interceptor that attacked. I'm fairly certain that's the only example I can point to of Hezbollah even accidentally bombing civilian populations. For the entire 111 days that the Iran war has gone on, everything I've seen out of Hezbollah is them taking out tanks and snipers and command centers of the IDF inside Lebanon. Does that matter? I really want to know. Does that matter to anybody? When you call a group a terrorist group, does it matter whether or not they do terrorism? When you're defining who's a good guy and a bad guy in a conflict, does it matter what they do and who they target and what their purpose is and what their actions are? Does any of that matter at this point? Or are the definitions established and this is just how it goes? Like, from now on, even though Israel is the one murdering civilians, Israel is the one invading another country, Israel is the one deliberately using terrorism by saying we're going to kill civilians for every drone you launch, does any of that matter? Or are they just the good guys no matter what they do, and Hezbollah are terrorists even if they literally never do terrorism? Does any of this matter? I think it does, actually. I think this does matter. I think actually whether a group is a terrorist group or not depends on whether they do terrorism or not. Whether somebody is on the right side of a conflict depends on whether they're motivated by a positive inclination or whether they are just ruthlessly engaged in an ethnic cleansing campaign. I don't know. I'm like old school like that. I think that actually should matter to some degree. I just, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? Honestly, it's the same thing over and over. It's exhausting. It's infuriating. And it's like only getting worse. Not once in the 2 years that Israel has been carrying out a genocide in front of everybody, not once have they even tried to justify their statements. I guess you can say they lie sometimes, right? It's like, yeah, they're on camera going, we're cutting off the food, we're cutting off the water. And then later when they're confronted with that, they do lie about it. They do say, what, us? We didn't do that. Besides that, there was the instance, it was in the first week of the conflict. They bombed a hospital, and there was a feverish attempt to lie about that. That did happen. It was in the first week. It was in October 2023. They bombed the hospital there in Gaza, and then they put out fake audio that they claimed was an intercept of radio transmissions from Hamas to try to blame Hamas for blaming the hospital. But like, at least in that moment, for that brief sparkle of time, they seem to actually be concerned about their perception overseas. They seem to not want to be blamed for bombing a hospital. Since then, they've bombed every hospital. Since that one little flash of conscience where they're like, what, us bombing hospitals? We would never. At this point, they have a program where they're systematically bombing healthcare workers in Lebanon. They're just doing it. So, you know, like at a certain point, we got to do something about it. We can't just let this happen forever. Like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do about this? Because we got to do something. And when it seems like Donald Trump finally does one potential thing, he does one thing that hints at a thing that could happen, he actually requests politely that they maybe stop bombing Lebanon for a minute. They lash out and bomb 150 places and just go completely insane. So I don't know if Trump is the guy who's going to rein them in, quite frankly. I honestly, that's crazy. It is crazy. The end of Hezbollah will mark the beginning of a beautiful peace between our two countries. Oh, I'm sure that's true. Israel is in the security zone in southern Lebanon to rid the area of Hezbollah and dismantle its terror infrastructure. We will remain there until that mission is complete. The people of Lebanon deserve a future free from Hezbollah's grip and a real, genuine peace between our two countries that remains possible. Yeah, I don't know, man. I prefer when they're just honest about what they're doing. I mean, if you're gonna just, you know, ruthlessly bomb civilians, just say that. Like, at least then, you know, we know what you're up to. But it's even more despicable to me to be like, we're bringing freedom to Lebanon. And they're just like, we are gonna kill 1,000 of you for every one of us you make sad. For every tear we shed, we're gonna kill 1,000 of you. So I don't know. Maybe I'm a little bit like nitpicky here. It seems to me like the force that is actively invading another country, has to shut the hell up about being fought about that. And like, that's the thing. I don't know. I don't know how much longer we can just repeat this over and over, but just know, like, the Lebanese are Christians. You know that, right? It's a Christian country, at least. A third of their population is Christian. They're not Hamas. They didn't participate in October 7th. None of that applies. There's one condition that Lebanon is that makes them the subject of this attack. That is that they're not Jewish. That is that they're not Israeli. Now, I don't know if I need to tell you this, but you aren't either. Europe isn't either. This is the mindset that they feel about everybody that's not them. Okay? So we should get that through our heads and treat them appropriately. You know, typically I'm a big believer in, you know, treat others as you would like to be treated. And I just have sort of principles that I stand by. But for certain things, I really do feel like it should be treat people, usually like groups. Like, treat nations the way they treat others, I think is actually the more appropriate thing to do. Because on an individual basis, you can endure abuse and you can suffer it stoically, and that's fine. But, like, when you're a group, when you're the head of a group, when you have the obligation of protection of a group, you have to do certain things. I always think about this when it comes to things like censorship, where it's like, if you're calling for censorship, I have no problem with you being censored. I don't want anybody censored. I don't want to be, because I don't want to be censored. I want to treat others like I want to be treated. And even if somebody else has something to say that I find distasteful, I would say things that they find distasteful. So, hey, we're both going to say distasteful things. There's a fair trade-off here. But in a way, I'm kind of like, well, if you want there to be censorship, you should be censored. You should get a taste of your own medicine. If you advocate for censorship, I think you should be censored. I think that's fine. right? I mean, does that make sense? And I think if you as a nation, like Lebanon, or like Israel, and the way it treats Lebanon is just like, well, they're an inconvenience to us, so therefore we get to kill them. It's kind of like, all right, fair play then. I think we should treat you with that exact same level of consideration. I really think they actually deserve it. Like, Lebanon doesn't deserve anything. Lebanon's never done anything to anybody. Lebanon didn't, you know, drive out the Palestinians. Lebanon took them in. Lebanon didn't attack Israel on October 7th. They could have, probably should have. Like, going back in time, Hezbollah probably should have gotten involved a lot earlier. But apparently, Israel's the only one who's willing to be as ruthless as they are. I consider that a moral defect, but it works when everybody else is a coward. When everybody else is completely cowardly and borne down and submissive to these people, they get away with it. I think they should be destroyed. I think Israel should be destroyed. I think we should destroy Israel. I don't think it should just be destroyed. I think it's actually like we need to destroy Israel. For the love of God. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me the world wouldn't be a better place if Israel had never existed. And sort of, you know, again, it's like, I just don't understand what's going on in these people's minds. Like the awesome Jew that we read earlier, where they're, you know, it's just like this weird, they're like in their own head where they feel like they're like being forced to do this. It's like, no, you're not. Like what, just what are you doing? Just what are you doing? We're literally just like, hey, would you mind not killing a bunch of civilians? Sort of causing a problem with our peace negotiations. And they're just like, how about instead we be the villains you think we are, and we'll take back Sinai, and we'll drive the Gazans into the ocean, and we'll slaughter everyone in Lebanon if we want to. It's like, we literally just asked you to chill for a second. Like, I don't understand what's going on in y'all's minds. But like, you have to be stopped. You have to be stopped. You people have to be stopped. Laura Loomer calls for censorship on X, says APAC tracker account and anyone who reposts its content should be banned for incitement to violence. Looks like APAC tracker is going to have to go handcuff themselves to Laura Loomer's front door. Yeah, kind of ironic. The woman that once chained herself to the outside of X to protest their censorship, now calling for censorship. That's kind of ironic, isn't it? Kind of ironic? Isn't that kind of ironic? Not really, actually. Actually, it's completely in line with the just base hypocrisy that forms the core of her personality. So not actually that surprising. Conservative journalist. Sorry, Kellen. All respect to Kellen. I know he's got certain journalistic, you know, standards to uphold, but I don't. So I'm going to change this. Conservative journalist. Israeli gossip monger. Israeli gossiper Laura Loomer is calling for the popular account APAC tracker to be banned after the suspects behind a recent terror plot reportedly used images created by the account to identify politicians they'd be targeting. Well, how dare they? I mean, were the facts provided accurate? They were? Well, that's no defense. Just because they're telling the truth about something? Like, it's different when you have something like the SPLC putting out a hate crime map where they just assert that, you know, the Family Christian Council, you know, for pro-life, and they're just like telling all of their followers, these people are terrorists. These are Christian extremists that want to kill you. And it's a bunch of people like, we like babies. What? We want to help moms with babies. And they're just like, they're evil fascists, and they want to kill all trans people. They're a threat. They're committing a genocide against you. okay, I don't think that should be legal. I don't think it should be legal for, you know, a very high-powered, prominent organization to be declaring their political enemies terrorists and basically encouraging their followers to attack them. It's a little different when you do what APAC Tracker does, which is literally just show the factual reality behind people's fundraising. Should open secrets be shut down? I mean, the APAC Tracker account, you're probably familiar with it because we show the images all the time because it's useful. They show a picture of a politician and they show how much money they've taken from APAC. That's just a factual accounting. That's just reality. Laura Loomer is mad that this is the reality. According to the FBI indictment, the suspects who plotted the drone and sniper attack on the White House used flyers and mugshots from APAC Tracker account to choose which politicians to kill, she wrote, adding that account essentially puts pro-Israel Americans on wanted posters and politicians on the woke Reich, like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie, will keep boosting it. You know who also brags about how much politicians take from APAC? APAC does. You know, you could find this information from APAC themselves as they brag about choosing all of their politicians. This is a tricky situation for APAC to be in because they're trying to, you know, control, people's access to just factual information. That's a difficult thing to do. Do we have this video of, Laura? She's eating dog food in that video. She's eating dog food right there. APAC Tracker, update. APAC and the Israeli lobby have now spent $15 million boosting Ed Galrain and attacking Representative Thomas Massie in KYO4. See, and what track APAC needs to add right after that is, and that's a great thing. Thanks, APAC. Then it's fine, right? I didn't see a call to action there. I didn't see them saying Ed Galrain got support from APAC, therefore go out and kill Ed Galrain. There's no call to action. There's no call to violence. There was no lie that made people think that, you know, these people are terrorists when they aren't. This isn't an SPLC situation or anything of the sort. This is a factual accounting of the amount of money that they've taken from APAC. So if Track APAC wants to go from being a violent anti-Semitic domestic terrorist organization, as Laura Loomer asserts, if you want to transmogrify, if you want to transform and evolve into just yet another pro-Jewish organization, then all you need to do is put a smiley face at the end of every one of your tweets, okay? Somebody send this to Track APAC. They need to know. You need to switch the red with the green, just switch them around, and just say, hey, look, we love APAC, and we want to celebrate how APAC is helping all of these patriotic Israel-first candidates get elected. If you want to know who to vote for, if you support the ruthless parasite of Israel, then this is who you vote for, okay? It's not that what you're saying is bad or wrong or incorrect or not something that APAC themselves brags about. It's that you don't like it. It's called celebration parallax. It's the same reason why you can find organizations like Stop Antisemitism or the Tikva Fund or any of the other Jewish organizations or Dennis Prager himself making videos where they talk about, and indeed in some cases brag about, the fact that Jewish forces, Jewish ideology, Jewish people were behind the gay rights movement and the civil rights movement and all of the isms, as Dennis Prager puts it, racism, sexism, like these things were born out of the Jewish community. And that's a great thing. And thank you, Jews, for doing that. See, now I'm a patriot. I'm a genius. I'm a loving person. If I say exactly the same thing, but I don't like it, now I'm an evil anti-Semite and I have to be destroyed. So for Track APAC, you've got to just pretend you're happy about what's going on. That's it. It's pretty simple. Just go, you know, APAC gave however many millions of dollars to Ed Galrain to unseat Thomas Massie. Take that, Thomas Massie. Now you understand, Thomas Massie, what it's like to go up against the Jewish people. It's like running into a buzzsaw, as John Podoretz puts it. Take that. You deserve it. You stupid idiot sucker, Thomas Massey. You should have sold out to Israel a long time ago. Then you'd be successful, like the genius Ed Gowerain, the patriotic genius Ed Gowerain, who humbly accepted a moderate consideration from the Patriots at AIPAC. Like, you, if you just phrase it that way, no problem. There's no problem at all. There's no problem. I mean, you don't want to get blamed for domestic terrorist attacks. So track AIPAC simply needs to celebrate and honor and uplift those who take AIPAC money and just publish how much money they've taken from AIPAC and say, so this is a guy you can trust. All right. Look how much money this AIPAC gave to this guy. You think AIPAC is giving out money to guys you can't trust? If AIPAC gave him money, that's who you should probably be voting for. Okay? Instead of, rename it Celebrate AIPAC. Instead of Track AIPAC, name it Celebrate AIPAC. Or, you know, Champions of AIPAC. And then everybody that you highlight as being a lick, spittle, scumbag, slave of Israel, you can instead say they are a patriotic American who actually genuinely understands the value that Israel brings to our country. So I think that's the solution. And I think Laura Loomer should be kicked off of X. Not that I believe anybody should be kicked off of X, but I do believe people should get what they want, get what they demand. If you want this for other people, it should be done to you. That's how I feel. Anna Kasparian says she's against Americans being informed about who our politicians sell themselves to. Well, but only when it comes to Israel. More like Arian Kasparian? Hold on. Wait a second. Kasparian Brotherhood? Do you see where I'm going with this? Laura Loomer should go to jail. Maybe we play that video of Laura on the other side, but actually I think I'm done with it. I think I'm done with it and her. And again, like, you know, you can just ignore these people. Laura Loomer. Who cares? Who cares what she has to say? And with that, folks, we end our first hour. We'll be back in about 60 seconds to continue our coverage of the absolute insanity tearing apart our culture from the inside out. Support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. If you want to let them know who sent you, the 2026 Dodge Charger giveaway is on with a 50-time multiplier starting today. Make your purchases, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Be entered to win the incredible cars and enjoy the incredible products. We'll be right back.
Have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th, 2026 coming up. And they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026. And they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition, and then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this and the concepts, like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition with the Rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one, very simple. America, 250 years strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, ride fast, live free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the deep state. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You're going to promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you're really going to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. Hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I want to go to clip 31 here. This is DNI Tulsi Gabbard. This was her leaving the last time as one of the last vestiges of the coalition that swept Trump into office that is systematically being eliminated by the Israeli influence that is glommed on to his administration in the ensuing year. Very tragic to see. It looks like RFK Jr. is probably not long for this position anyway. But in the meantime, here's Tulsi Gabbard, former DNI, as she resigned from her position. Let's watch.
Before the COVID pandemic, Dr. Fauci, as head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, provided millions in U.S. taxpayer dollars to fund dangerous gain-of-function research on bat coronaviruses at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, work which is now widely viewed as the source of the unintentional lab leak that sparked the pandemic. Now, in support of President Trump's maximum transparency mandate, today, on my final day as Director of National Intelligence, I'm releasing never-before-seen communications and documents that expose exactly how Fauci worked with politicized career leadership in the intelligence community to suppress the truth about his actions, the virus's lab leak origins, and his role in directing U.S. funding for this dangerous research that caused immeasurable harm and countless lost lives. Now, these documents expose Fauci's direct role in influencing and manipulating IC assessments on COVID-19 and how Fauci lied to Congress in 2024 when under oath he denied knowledge of or participation in discussions with intelligence officials about viral research. We also received testimony from multiple intelligence community whistleblowers who reported retaliation for challenging the intelligence community's manipulation of intelligence on the virus's origins, once again revealing a clear pattern of suppressing dissent, silencing critics, and burying the truth. Dr. Fauci's close relationships with the intelligence community enabled him to assume three key roles that shield him from scrutiny. First, Dr. Fauci funded dangerous gain-of-function coronavirus research linked to Big Pharma and their pursuit of universal vaccines worth trillions of dollars. Second, Dr. Fauci was the behind-the-scenes advisor who, alongside his hand-picked so-called experts, pushed the intelligence community to endorse a natural animal origin to hide his dangerous gain-of-function research that he funded using taxpayer dollars, all of this in a deliberate attempt to cover up the truth and shift the blame and attention away from Fauci's own actions. Third, Dr. Fauci became the nation's pandemic pundit, and he publicly pushed lies, disinformation, and censorship using every platform available. Now, according to hundreds of reviewed emails, which are included in this release, the intelligence community almost always incorporated Fauci's recommendations. He promoted a fraudulent paper whose publication he helped prompt as legitimate information for intelligence community consideration. Senior analysts praised Dr. Fauci not as a policymaker, but as what they called an unbiased guide to the real coronavirus experts, while deliberately ignoring experts who might dissent from Fauci's narratives. Now, Fauci didn't stop there. He blatantly lied to Congress under oath during his 2024 testimony to the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic, denying that he ever spoke to any intelligence agency about COVID. Now, the correspondence I'm releasing today directly contradicts his sworn testimony. Now, we received statements from multiple whistleblowers revealing that the intelligence analysts who dared to challenge Dr. Fauci's COVID origin conclusions faced threats of retaliation, marginalization, and many suffered career setbacks.
Well, it sounds like he should maybe be in jail. It sounds like he should be in jail right now. But why isn't he in jail? Why do we have to keep reiterating all of the crimes that he committed? So much work goes into this, and it's all funded by you going to thealexjonesstore.com. So this is a fundraiser time right now. We need to be raising funds because we are launching into the next stage of our, you know, rocket trip. We've shed one booster, and now the new one's firing up, and we need you to fill our tank and give us the fuel to get to that next level. So please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. There is a mega sale going on right now. You're getting 40% off methylene blue tincture, methylene blue caps, Ultra DNA Revival, Shilajit caps and gummies, up to 35% off methylene red tincture, colostrum, and MK Ultra, and you're getting 30% off all apparel, shirts, hats, hoodies, and everything else. You know, what we sell you at thealexjonesstore.com are just like these amazing naturally occurring vitamins, minerals, supplements, just CMOS and Shilajit. It just is like God's gift to humanity. At some point, humanity discovers it, and get it at thealexjonesstore.com. Welcome back, folks. Stories in New York Post. Spy agency quashed complaint against Fauci for lying to Congress about gain-of-function research. New documents show. These are the documents released by Tulsi Gabbard. Outgoing director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard released a trove of files on Friday detailing Anthony Fauci's role in the COVID-19 pandemic, showing that officials protected him from a whistleblower complaint alleging that he lied to Congress about gain-of-function research after he suggested pangolins were to blame for the outbreak that killed millions. Fauci, the documents show, met with a group of CIA officers on June 4th, 2021, weeks after his fiery May 11th denial to Congress that he risked that he funded risky research into coronaviruses in the same Chinese city where the pandemic began. While briefing the CIA, Fauci keyed in on specifics about the Wuhan Institute of Virology experiments on pangolin samples, according to a summary report. I mean, I just, it's like, yeah, I mean, again, this has been so frustrating. What are we doing? I've been complaining about this the entire time the second Trump administration has been around, where like we keep announcing investigations into things that we've known about for decades. We don't need to investigate this stuff anymore, but we do the investigation, even though everybody knows what's happened, even though all of the evidence of infinite criminality is at our fingertips, available to anybody who looks. We got to do the investigate. We got to launch the actual investigation now. So we all wait patiently and twiddle our thumbs. And finally, the investigation arrives. And hey, sure enough, everything we've been saying the entire time is proven to be true. And absolutely, not only did they start the pandemic in the first place, did they create the virus with gain of function, they covered it up. Fauci was involved in the intelligence agencies in doing this. It all is proven to be absolutely true, and then nothing happens. So are we just going to keep talking about it? I just got to keep talking about this. I just got to keep explaining the same things over and over. And it's like even the video we just watched, like, yes, the information Tulsi Gabbard is laying out is bombshell. But it's also been well known for 5 years at this point. And the way that she phrases it, it doesn't seem to quite have the oomph that it should. This is not complicated. He lied to Congress for the same reason a murderer lies to the police, to get away with it. The lying to Congress, yes, is a crime. Yes, it's incontrovertible that he lied. Yes, they covered it up, and everybody who participated in the cover-up is now guilty of being party to the crime of lying to Congress and covering up the facts of the American people, but it was all in service of the actual crime, which was creating a virus that killed millions of people and shut down the entire world economy and destroyed the lives of millions of people more. This guy's walking around? This guy's just out there eating breakfast somewhere? Like, what the hell are we doing? It's crazy because it's just like, I mean, just throw it on the pile, right? how many things was this country subjected to that we voted for Trump specifically to get justice for? Not just stop. We didn't just want the border shut. We want Alejandro Mayorkas put in prison or possibly executed for treason for opening up our border. We don't just want the pandemic to end. We want all of the people that did that to us punished. We don't need another investigation or another explanation of the rampant criminality that brought about the Russia collusion hoax or the targeting of conservative citizens when they were protesting pro-life places or going to school board meetings or having their lives destroyed and being put in solitary confinement for a year straight because they walked through the Capitol on January 6th. Massive crimes have been committed against the American people, and none of them are being punished. None of them are being brought to justice. None of them. The most we can possibly hope for at this point is for a temporary pause of the abuse. That's what we've gotten with Donald Trump. He has offered us nothing else. Nobody's been arrested. Nobody's even been charged. Nobody suffered consequences for the enormous damage that they have wrought. And this is not something that you have to come up with some sort of novel political theory to explain. Like, you don't need to find a way to correlate this with that. It's like, how about every single crime committed by an illegal immigrant, Alejandro Mayorkas should be charged with? He had no right to open our border. He had no right to break our laws like that. He had no right to subject us to the victimization that we have been affected by. He had no right to do any of that, but he did it. He is the car that brings the murderer to the place where the murder occurs. He is the guy who opened, he's the security guard who left the door open deliberately so that the thieves could get in and rob the museum. He is responsible for their crimes. Joe Biden is responsible for their crimes. Again, like, if you just think about the overwhelming damage that COVID did, the disease itself, the reaction, the lockdowns, the shutdowns, the mental disaster that they've wrought on young people who were kept isolated with a mask on their face for a year. That's not even getting in to the people who lost jobs over this, or the mental pain that the people experienced as their family members were forced to die behind a plexiglass barrier. Not to mention the number of small businesses that went down, the amount of money that it cost us through PPP loans that were completely uncontrolled and stolen by everybody. Or the crime of stealing the election that was only facilitated by the mail-in ballots that were justified because of the lockdowns that were a consequence of the virus they created. And then you get into the vaccines. And God only knows how many people that's killed already, or how many people that has killed in a delayed fashion, how many people are suffering as we speak from heart problems, from myocarditis, or whatever else the vaccine gives you that, hey, it didn't kill them right away, but it's going to kill them in 5 years. They're going to live to 45 rather than 80, and it's all the fault of Anthony Fauci. And even if it wasn't on purpose, which I maintain it absolutely was, that this gain-of-function program to create this virus, for the virus to leak out of Wuhan lab exactly when it did, to provide the excuse for mail-in ballots so they could steal the 2020 election. This was all a gigantic scheme. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I don't need to see any more investigation. I don't need to know anything else to know that this should be treated as if it was a deliberate plot, because it almost certainly was. Even if it wasn't, even if it was an accident, the fact that he lied about it proves his complicity. Do we not understand this? That he deliberately prevented our ability to understand the virus and therefore combat the virus. if they were out there filling your mind with fear, claiming not to know where it came from, claiming to be struggling to find out what this virus is so that they could bring you the cure that you needed. And they're working their hardest. Meanwhile, they know exactly where it's from. They know exactly what the virus is. They know exactly how little danger it poses to young people. They didn't care. They locked down the schools anyway and called you a terrorist, said you loved the virus and just wanted grandma to die if you opposed them. They knew exactly what they were doing. So what are we doing here? What is this? I think I might need some literature from the founding fathers to explain, you know, what's actually going on here. When in the course of human events, this power structure we live under is so utterly unfit for purpose. It's not just that it fails to achieve justice, the reason it has been impaneled, the reason it was created in the first place was to establish justice, was to provide a method by which an average person could appeal to an authority and have crimes against them punished appropriately. It's not just that our government fails to do that, fails to uphold its end of the bargain. All it does is destroy us. All it does is cover up for the criminals. All it does is allow the people like Anthony Fauci or Alejandro Mayorkas or Joe Biden or any of these people to commit enormous, incomprehensible crimes against humanity and then skate away scot-free. That is the function of our government now. I don't understand. I don't understand how we are taking this, how we continue to take this. And again, how many times, and I don't want to like undercut the fact that Tulsi Gabbard made this public. I'm sure this was a big risk she was taking in confirming this once again. But we have known this the entire time. So, like, how many times have you seen announcements like this where it's like, yeah, he lied. Like, we know. We have his emails. We have his emails where he's orchestrating the lie, where he's gathering people together to go, hey, guys, we actually did create this virus in a lab. It actually did, but they're not going to trust us if we say that. So we need you to publish an article saying otherwise, lying to the American people. We will uphold that article as the authority. We'll criticize everybody for sharing any information that doesn't comport with our lie. And they're getting away with it. And they're getting away with doing this. I guess I'll just keep reporting on it. I guess I'll just keep telling you about all the ways in which we know they're criminals and that nothing is happening as a consequence of it. Kind of hard to justify absolutely any belief in anything these days. I mean, it's just completely insane. This story sent to me by Brandon Morello yesterday. ICE spent $700 million on 7 warehouses. Now it wants to get rid of them. The idea was meant to supercharge President Trump's mass deportation plan. Immigration and Customs Enforcement would purchase more than a dozen empty warehouses across the United States to massively expand its capacity to detain people deemed to be in the country illegally, which in turn would spike deportations. A year into Mr. Trump's term, it had bought 11 facilities at a cost of $1 billion. But in a major turnabout, the agency is planning to offload 7 warehouses purchased for more than $700 million by either giving them to other federal agencies or selling them outright, according to documents obtained by the New York Times. So we spent $1 billion on warehouses and then never put any illegal immigrants in them. Okay. We spent $1 billion. We bought $100 million warehouses and then just didn't do anything with them. And then just decided, we're not going to do that, actually. Actually, we're not going to deport anybody. Yeah, it's kind of unpopular It's kind of unpopular. People don't like us deporting people. You know, we're kind of afraid of how it's going to affect the midterms. Oh, war with Iran? Absolutely. Let's do that tomorrow. For sure. No need to concern ourselves about the will of the American people when it's something you want, sir. But no, the immigration, the deportations, it's kind of icky. It's kind of unpopular. People kind of don't like it. So I guess we'll give your country away. I guess we'll just let the hordes of tens of millions of hostile foreigners that were deliberately seeded into our country by an administration that actually hates us and is trying to destroy us. Maybe we should just give them citizenship instead, since deportations are like moderately unpopular with the portion of the population. Our hands are tied. Sorry. If something is moderately unpopular with Democrats, what are we supposed to do? Do it? We're supposed to just ignore that? We're supposed to just go against the opinions of the other party? It's just, this is impossible. War with Iran, hugely unpopular? Huh? Yeah, let's do that. No, absolutely, we'll do that. We'll do it forever. And we'll do it however long it takes and whatever's necessary. Infinite amounts of money available for that. Doesn't matter how unpopular it is. Do you understand what I mean? These excuses don't make any sense because they're not true. There's no reason we can't punish Anthony Fauci. We're just not doing it. There's no reason we can't charge Alejandro Mayorkas with crimes against humanity and treason. We just aren't going to do it. There's no reason why we can't deport 100 million people. We're just not doing it. We're not putting the criminals in prison. We're not correcting the education system so we actually produce intelligent people. We're not making it inconvenient for illegal immigrants to be here by utilizing, you know, the remissions that they send back, the money they send home. We're allowing them to do that, not even taxing it. All of this is a choice. All of this is a choice. So you really got to ask yourself if absolutely everything this government does is in direct opposition to our well-being, to our way of life, to our continuing existence in some cases, if every single time a criminal is exposed at the highest levels, nothing happens, what are we doing? I don't know, man. It just really doesn't make any sense. That's all I can say. Which is why it really, really makes you feel crazy. Makes you feel crazy just knowing how unbelievably simple it would be to solve every single problem in this country. And so really our only barrier to actually like succeeding is identifying who it is that's making these decisions and then getting rid of them. And I know, I mean, I've been saying for years, but it's always been true that the vast majority of our problems in America are literally created by our government on purpose, by design, like the actual everyday problems that you're going to have. Like they're the deliberate, they're the designed outcome of the policies being pursued. I don't even think it's like an exaggeration to say that you could solve almost every problem in a month. I honestly don't even think that, which is why it's just unbearable, this persistent inability to do anything for us. Especially as we've been pointing out with the Trump administration the entire time, it would be easy to call this speculation. It would be easy for me to say, I think we could get a bunch of stuff done if only we had the will, but I have no proof for it. But I do have proof for it. I have proof for incredible, like America is able to do incredible things, unbelievable things. And we do if it benefits Israel. This is why we've been talking about this so much. This is why it is a persistent point of our coverage. Not that I'm obsessed with Israel. I genuinely don't care about Israel. I wish they didn't exist. But other than that, it's only when they affect us. And it's only when it serves as an example of the ways in which this government can move mountains. Every single problem we deal with is a choice being made by the people in power. Every single one. All of the anti-white crap in universities They will literally look you in the eye and tell you, what are we supposed to do about that? What are you suggesting? What are you suggesting? You think that the government should dictate to colleges what they can and can't cut? We have something called the First Amendment, sir. It's like, well, they don't like Israel. Oh, okay. Well, then, take away their funding. Oh, well, in that case, threaten to shut down their funding unless they, stop doing that. Oh, all of a sudden it works. Oh, all of a sudden it happens. Everything is like this. Everything. It's like we've got to be able to use this fact. We've got to get through to people. What is wrong in your life? What is wrong in your life? You're barely able to put food on the table. The inflation is incredible and unrelenting. Why do you think that is? What's caused the inflation to go up so much? It's all the printing of the money that we did because they forced you to shut down the economy, even though they knew that that would be necessary. They knew that shutting down the economy would necessitate a massive influx of fiat money that would cause massive inflation that would make it more difficult for you to make ends meet. Guess what? They did it anyway. They chose to do it anyway. They did it on the basis of combating a virus they claimed not to know about, but they in fact created in a lab. They claimed it was necessary despite the economic damage that would be done because they just didn't know what the virus was, and better safe than sorry. And sure, the economy might do better if we don't lock down, but then 10,000 million people might die. So I guess we got to shut it down. Knowing the entire time they knew exactly what the virus was. They knew it didn't necessitate shutting down the economy or schools. They did it anyway. Having trouble affording a house? Well, there's 100 million people that shouldn't be here that are competing with you. Can't find a job? Guess why that is? It's not like the Indians arriving here are being brought over on a cloud. It's not like this is a natural phenomenon that we simply have to deal with. Like, well, it's raining, better hold an umbrella. Like, no, you're being sprayed with a hose. Go attack the person that has the hose. Do you understand what I'm saying? Nothing that's wrong with America is natural. It's all created on purpose by our government. All of it. All of it. They opened the border. They shut down the economy. They created the virus in the first place. They took over the media and silenced everybody that spoke out against it. They rigged the election to give us the people that would open the border in the first place. They created the mail-in ballots with absolutely no safety system, no check, no ability to guarantee that the election would actually be valid or the people sending in the ballots would be the right people to send in those ballots. They did this to you. They've done this to all of us, and they just keep doing it. I don't know, man. I don't know how much longer we're going to let them get away with this. But again, it's almost like they had the ability. They could have, with the election of Donald Trump, let us fix some of this. And this is the part that really puts me over the edge, is knowing all of the power they have, knowing all of the things they can do, all of the levers they can pull as the President of the United States or as the Congress of the United States. They can move mountains. They can do whatever they want whenever they want. They can go to war with sovereign nations. But they won't do a damn thing for us. They won't even pretend to. And that's just how it is. So, they're just daring us to do something about it. I think we should.
Here's three big announcements right now. We have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th. 2026 coming up, and they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026, and they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition, and then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this, in the concepts, like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition, with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one. Very simple. America, 250 years strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyrannies of 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, ride fast, live free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the deep state. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You can kind of promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you really got to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. Hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good-looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com. New America's 250th birthday, limited edition, July 4th. Apparel now available. And right now, introductory, they're 30% off all apparel on the site, not just the America 250th birthday limited editions. It's only available for a month and a half. These designs are limited edition, thealexjonesstore.com. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you, because we want you to love it and be impressed with it. So we have a relationship with you. And so the only way you miss out is not getting our T3, our bovine colostrum, our ultramethylene red, our Shilajit, our Irish sea moss. They're all amazing. But if you do anything, methylene blue and the water filtration system, when you take this out of the box, I've never seen, I went and checked, it's the highest stainless steel there is. And it turned out it wasn't that much more. I mean, it was somewhat more, another 30% more to have this. But I mean, it's just standalone. Nobody's got anything even close to this. I congratulations, Bigley. I am very impressed. Very, very impressed. I know a winner when I see it. And this sexy beast is going to help so many people cut out all the garbage out of their water. One of the biggest things you can do to take control of your life. And it's going to fund this operation. So I am literally in love with this. It looks like Marilyn Monroe to me right now. I forget the term when you're attracted to, like, sports cars and objects. I've never been sexually attracted to, like, a sports car, though I thought they're cool. Never been sexually attracted to... I'm actually being a little sarcastic, but I'm not. I'm actually physically attracted to this right now. Okay, this is... Because I know it's going to help people. I'm being silly. Actually, I'm not. What sexy is it's great. I know a home run when I see it. And I know this is just another big victory. So thank you so much for all you and your support. And Bigley knocking out of the park.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. I want to play a video now. It's from Jon Stewart's podcast. It's a really fascinating video. I believe it's clip 54, if I'm not mistaken. And there's a couple interesting points about this. But I'm watching this video, and in the first, like, minute or two, I'm already thinking, okay, this would make good fodder for the show. It'd make a good chance to explain the reality that these people are missing and their own mindsets that make them blind to the reality that they're missing. And then, like, halfway through the video, they actually explain what they are talking about, and it makes the whole thing even crazier. So let's go to clip 54 here. We'll pause it and comment as we go along. This is former Daily Show host Jon Stewart. I guess he has a weekly podcast now, and he brought on a couple of intellectual academics to discuss how all the regular people are being distrustful of them, and that demands an explanation. Who tricked these people into not trusting the authorities anymore? It's hilarious. Let's watch.
I think about globalization,
mm-hmm.
and what it has done to the sort of the center of the country and the manufacturing base. And, you know, working class whites, I would say, are the primary victims of that kind of job loss, right? It's very common in this country to say the policies that were instituted destroyed that the economic prospects for those folks in that part of the country. It led them to deaths of despair. It brought out a lot of different vices and those kinds of things. And we're going to take policy measures to repair that damage. We're going to
let's pause right there. See, he starts off. It's kind of a good start. Where do you think he's going from this? This is one of those interesting things where they will openly acknowledge, like, yeah, globalization, which, again, didn't just happen. The globe didn't just, you know, become interconnected all of a sudden. Policy decisions were made. The NDAA, or not the NDAA, but the trade agreement, North American trade agreement, was passed that drove factories out. Like, they understand. They know perfectly well that these complaints are not frivolous, that they're not inaccurate, that, yes, globalization or the deliberate drive to interconnect all these national economies for various reasons, none of which have to do with the well-being of the people of the country, who the politicians are actually supposed to represent, has destroyed working-class white people, has destroyed the middle class in this country. For no fault of their own, they've seen their jobs, their previously well-paying, stable jobs, be ripped out from their hands, given to other people. And yeah, when your population is abused, when your population is disadvantaged by forces beyond your control, it actually makes perfect sense and is a reasonable and appropriate response to then want other people to take charge who will institute policies that don't destroy your community, your way of life, your prosperity, your job itself. So do you think that he's saying this in order to talk about how right Trump supporters are, talk about how valid the complaints are from the average middle-class white person in America? Or are they going to first admit that the cause of the strife is accurate, admit that the strife is real, that the pain that these people are suffering is valid and accurate, and then somehow try to psychoanalyze it as if you need some sort of ulterior explanation, like somebody tricked these people into being mad about the tangible effects of the policies that have actually made their lives worse? You know, you don't have to wonder. It's John Stewart we're talking about here. It's not somebody who's about to give credence and actually genuinely embrace the views of middle America. He's here to express those views and then undercut, undermine, and distract from them. So back to John Stewart. He's just laid out how, yes, globalism, the policies pursued by globalists in order to, you know, deliberately destroy our manufacturing base and turn us into a service economy and interconnect, you know, various economies so that we could do manufacturing in China to save them a couple bucks. And sure, it destroys your town. Sure, it drives the business away from America. And sure, it means that the goods that we're getting are of lower quality and that the wealth never actually is dispersed to our community, but in fact, you know, sucked up into corporate combines that invest them elsewhere. But shut up. But you have to take that. But you have to, that's because that's what they wanted to do. And you being mad about that or wanting policies to reverse that, you're an extremist idiot. And, you know, you have to be dealt with. Back to John Stewart and the two other idiots.
Various things to try and alleviate the suffering that occurred from the policies that were put in place.
Yes.
Isn't that the exact story of racially exclusionary policies? Why is that in any way a controversial issue?
How is it?
Well,
it's not.
Okay. Good question. I mean, I grew up.
I'm taking this class. I'm doing this.
All right, man. Well, you get an A already.
All right. Done.
But, you know, I grew up in an auto town, Flint, Michigan. I grew up in an automaker family.
Can we pause it real quick? Can we pause it? Because I don't even understand what that question was. He said, globalism destroyed the communities of white people in this country. Globalism robbed America of its prosperous middle class base. It has tangibly negatively affected a lot of people, and now they want to elect other people who will pursue other policies that will benefit them and that will help them. And then he says, how is that any different than racial exclusionary policies? What the hell is he talking about? I genuinely don't even understand the question. How does that have anything to do with, like, racial exclusionary policies? What are you talking about? Genuinely, I don't even understand what question he's asking. And the good news is it never gets answered. They start talking about other stuff that is even more insane and nonsensical. And once again, reinforces that these people are completely out to lunch. They're simultaneously trying to figure out why people don't trust institutions and, you know, organizations or societies like, you know, the academies, you know, academics as a whole is really what they're focused on, while simultaneously pushing a blood libel against white people as if, again, I'm trying to figure out what he's saying, that, like, white people being mad that they've had their lives deliberately destroyed by policies that were made to disadvantage them and not wanting those policies to be implemented anymore. I guess that's like being in the KKK is what he's saying. Like, I guess that is basically the same as Jim Crow, I guess, is what is the point he's making. It doesn't make any sense, but that's okay because he basically just starts talking about other stuff now. So, okay, back to the professor here.
West, that's where I'm from. So there's no question. Democrats lost that white working class, and Republicans gained major portions of it because of globalization, because of loss of jobs, because of sending jobs abroad, and on and on and on. No question. But what's also happened in that process is they have taught that white working class and a whole lot of other people to distrust institutions like universities, distrust institutions like great museums, distrust this whole apparatus that Annette and I are just two small parts of the practice of history.
Okay, all right, let's pause that there. So once again, they acknowledge that the policies of the Democrats that sold out the white working class, made the white working class suffer, caused them problems, and yet, for some reason, they can't just leave it at that. It can't just be, yeah, the Democrats had policies that destroyed these people's communities, so now they don't support them. No, no. Then he goes on to say, they were taught to distrust the universities as a result of this. They were taught to distrust institutions. It's like, what do you mean? You just admitted that the distrust was well-placed, that they formerly trusted these institutions. Those institutions screwed them over. You just admitted that. You just admitted the policies that were promoted by the universities. Where do you think the concept of globalism came from? From the institutions, from the government itself that was instituted ostensibly to protect these people, to make sure they could continue their lives without their lives being destroyed by the interference of, you know, corporate powers from across the world, failed utterly. I mean, they want you to think it's crazy to just, like, notice where the attacks are coming from. And they can't give you the human cognition, the freedom of mind to see for yourself, these are the people that institutes the policies that hurt me. I don't like those people anymore. No, you're not a thinking person with your own conscience and your own free will and a soul and an ability to just perceive where attacks are coming from and then to defend against them. You had to be taught. What they're trying to frame this as is that globalization itself just occurs. It just happens, you know? It's like a storm. It's like the sun rising. Nobody controls it. Nobody set policies in place. That they can sort of depersonalize and get distance from and just act like, well, it just happened. It's not like universities were writing, you know, articles about how it should happen. It's not like there was a, you know, philosophical and political underpinning that caused these things to occur. It's not like there were people that wrote bills that were then passed that brought this situation about. It just happened. It just happened, and, you know, nobody's to blame for it. Nobody, you know, intended it for it to happen. And then along came the Republicans who saw the pain that just occurred, right? They saw somebody who was just suffering because of the weather, and they came along and they said, oh, that suffering you're dealing with, that's actually the people in the universities. And us, you know, stupid MAGA voters, us retarded Americans just believed it. Just went, well, I don't know what to believe. This guy's telling me to be angry. I guess I'll be angry at the universities. I don't understand multisyllable words. It's confusing. I think they're wizards. I don't trust them, you know, because we're all just, you know, retards. We're all just low IQ idiots. We can't understand cause and effect. We couldn't possibly be perfectly correct about where the attacks are coming from, seeing them for what they are and opposing them appropriately. No, it's got to be somebody taught us this. Somebody came along and took advantage of this unfortunate situation that nobody could have seen coming. And we just want to manipulate people into opposing universities because we hate intelligence. We hate smartness. We hate book reading, right? It's like, again, what is this? Again, just like, what is this? You admit that the damage was done. You admit where the damage came from. You admit that the people who are mad at the source of the damage were right about where they put their ire. But at the same time, you cannot give them the respect, the mere consideration of recognizing that they're human beings, that we are human beings who are capable of recognizing and thinking for ourselves that I should oppose the people whose policies destroy my life. You're not conscious. You're not able to think of that yourself. That must have been implanted in your brain by Donald Trump, you idiot. Okay. All right. So we've been taught. We've been taught to distrust universities. Now comes the time when they bring up an example that I don't even get where they're going with this example, but it is a wild one. Perhaps one of the things that our great intellectual leaders, the likes of John Stewart and whoever this person is, you know, they know, they understand, they are enlightened, they are read in, they are the superiors. And any time that we disagree with them, it's not because we have a valid complaint that they admit is based on the actual reality of the situation. It must be that we're just probably racist. Probably it's just any opposition we have to being enlightened by them, it must be racism. And so in that regard, you know, maybe they just need to lobotomize us or something. You'll see what I mean. I think you'll see what I mean. So far they've admitted that globalism has destroyed the working white middle class, that these policies from the Democratic Party both brought that about and refused to acknowledge the damage that they've done. But now they're going to go into how actually we're wrong to understand where the attack came from, and they're right for, you know, being the intellectuals that led us down this path in the first place. Back to the video.
And we got surprised by that. And this is where the left has to take at least a look in the mirror and realize that for years we were being distrusted and didn't really even know it. And we forgot that only about 47% of Americans ever even go to college, any kind of college. And the slight majority of this country never sets foot on a college campus, even for a football game, because they can't afford it. So, you know, we lost touch in some ways. We made our creation of knowledge obscure in many ways, although many of us for years and years, and Annette was the spearhead of this because of the Sally Hemings case. And that took time to convince Monticello and the country.
Because of the Sally Hemings case, and it took time. It took time to convince Monticello and the country about Sally Hemings. That's the example that he uses. Sally Hemings. I don't know if I can appropriately express to you how insane this truly is. Sally Hemings was never romantically involved in any way, in any form with Thomas Jefferson. Let me say that again. Thomas Jefferson never had any children with any of his slaves. That has never been proven. That has never even been the subject of serious scientific inquiry. That is a lie. It is a flagrant lie. It is a damaging and hugely popular lie. At this point, if you ask an elementary school kid what they know about Thomas Jefferson, I would bet you $1,000 among the three things they know. They probably aren't going to say, well, he wrote the Declaration of Independence. He founded the University of Virginia. He designed his own house at Monticello. They're not going to say any of that stuff. They're not going to talk about his inventions. They're not going to talk about the genius of his political rhetoric. They're not going to talk about his Louisiana Purchase or Lewis and Clark. They're going to say Thomas Jefferson, that's the guy who raped his slaves. That's the slave rapist. That's the guy who A, owned slaves, and B, raped them. That is the character that our society tells about one of its greatest men in history, Thomas Jefferson. And they're going to tell this, and they're going to spread this. And this guy uses this example as a reason by which, I don't know, like, again, how does this connect to the white working class being destroyed about globalism? This is what I mean. They don't address that concern. They start acting like they're going to address the very real concerns that average middle Americans feel about the way in which their entire economy is being sold out from under them. They'll start off with that. Then it becomes a, well, it's because these stupid people that didn't go to college don't trust us. And it's hard to get them, you know, to understand that we are the dispensers of knowledge. He actually said the knowledge we create, which is incredible. And then as an example of, you know, the poor, benighted, the maligned academic striving away, desperate to expose the truth, the example he uses is Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson. A blood libel, a smear, a ridiculous lie that is now the number one thing kids are taught about Thomas Jefferson. If you go to Monticello, like I have, they will tell you this. You're going around looking at Thomas Jefferson's house. You're in his home, and the people who are appointed to oversee his legacy, who are living in his ancestral homeland, serving the position, you know, occupying the position of somebody who's there to foster and manage this man's historical legacy, they will sit there. And like, if you open up a pamphlet from Monticello, half the pamphlet will be about Sally frickin' Hemings, a woman who Thomas Jefferson never slept with. Never happened. There's no proof it ever happened. There's no hint that it ever happened. I'll read you some historical context here. But just understand, this is a creation of the media. This was never academically studied. This was never established beyond a reasonable doubt or beyond an unreasonable doubt or to any sufficient degree whatsoever. Sally Hemings was never romantically involved with Thomas Jefferson. She had none of his children. He did not predate upon her. He did not abuse her. It never happened. And this is the thing that these dumbass boomer liberals are talking about being an example of how they've had to fight to get the truth out there. It is an abject lie. And the people who spread it know it's a lie. The purpose of it is a blood libel. It is an attack on the character of Thomas Jefferson, and by extension, an attack on the documents that he wrote, the nation that he helped found, the ideas, the human rights that he helped to enshrine into law. It's an attack on our freedoms. It's an attack on our history. It's an attack on our people. It's an attack on our academics, because this is one of those sort of tests where they're going to assert it, and you better agree with it, and you better write your papers as if it's true, and you better repeat this lie. And if you don't, they're not going to contend with you factually. They're not going to try to disprove or prove to you that it's the accurate result. This is a sort of fiat assertion that you are commanded to accept, regardless of the utter and complete lack of evidence. There's been a lot of research into this. If you're interested in seeing the Jefferson Hemings controversy utterly eviscerated, might I suggest you go to YouTube and search out a channel called Leather Apron Club. Leather Apron Club has put together a nearly hour-long documentary about this. Leather Apron Club, cannot recommend them enough. They did the work that I never got around to doing. So I've been wanting to do this for a long time. They did it. They disproved the whole thing. But let me just give you a little overview. This is the Scholars Commission on the Jefferson Hemings Controversy. Members of the Scholars Commission on the Jefferson Hemings issue held a press conference to present evidence that contradicts arguments that Thomas Jefferson fathered children with his slave, Sally Hemings. Here's the report. The question of whether Thomas Jefferson fathered one or more children by his slave, Sally Hemings, is an issue about which honorable people can and do disagree. Indeterminate scientific findings in a 1998 DNA study involving one of Sally Hemings' children, Esten, erroneously led to dead certainty of it in the press. An organization called the Thomas Jefferson Heritage Society decided the best way to find the truth about whether Thomas Jefferson fathered any of Sally Hemings' children was to ask a group of 13 very extinguished and diverse group of historians and scientists, white, black, male, and female, to look carefully at all of the evidence and make a public report. What they came out with was called the Report of the Scholars Commission on the Jefferson Hemings Controversy, copyright 2001, recopyright 2011. Most had either held chaired professorships or served as departmental chairs at prominent universities, and several had written highly respected books about Jefferson. They worked independently of the TJHS, that's Thomas Jefferson Historical Society. They served without compensation, and they spent nearly a year examining all of the arguments and all of the evidence regarding paternity. After a careful review of all of the evidence, the commission agreed unanimously that the allegation is by no means proven, and they found it regrettable that public confusion about the 1998 DNA testing and other evidence has misled many people. Quote, we have found most of the arguments used to point suspicion towards Thomas Jefferson to be unpersuasive and factually erroneous. Not a single member of our group, after an investigation lasting roughly 1 year, finds the case against Thomas Jefferson to be highly compelling, and the overwhelming majority of us believe it is very unlikely that he fathered any children by Sally Hemings. In fact, and they pretty much know who it really was. Thomas Jefferson's brother may have had a liaison with her. But, I mean, genuinely think about this. They go from talking about how the white working class is stupid for understanding who it is that destroyed their lives. All of a sudden, they switch over to why don't they trust the academics? You know how long it took us to convince them Sally Hemings was raped by Thomas Jefferson?
Have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th, 2026 coming up. And they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026. And they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition, and then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this, and the concepts like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one, very simple. America, 250 years strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, ride fast, live free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the deep state. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean. Very nice. If you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are, you can kind of promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you're really going to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. So, hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America you name it. That's a good looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. Third hour of War Room Live is on. I'm going to go back to that video because I'm not even sure where they go from that. I was watching the video, and as soon as I heard them mention Sally Hemings, you know, the Sally Hemings thing, you know, it took us a while to convince Monticello and the wider public of that truthfulness. It's a lie. It's a lie. It's a lie. The reason that people even claim that Sally Hemings, you know, fathered a child by Thomas Jefferson, the other way around, is because, like, in 1998, they did a DNA test of one of Sally Hemings's ancestors, or one of their, you know, in the matrilineal line, and they found DNA that matches Jefferson DNA, but it's like, that's it. That's it. There's not, I mean, they didn't test the kid and said, oh, your father is Thomas Jefferson. They tested like the great, 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 great grandson and said at some point in the past, somebody from a Jefferson family must have fathered somebody in your family tree. That's it. And from that, it is now established fact that Thomas Jefferson raped his slaves. That's what they're going with. Like, how incredible is that? How not credible is that? That's what I'm asking. So again, 1998, they deliberately lied about the results of the DNA test in order to smear Thomas Jefferson, in order to destroy his name and his legacy. Within 3 years, there had already been a commission established to investigate these claims, totally disproved them. And I mean actually disproved them. Like, looked at the records and was like, oh, Thomas Jefferson was in France when this child was conceived. Couldn't have been him. Oh, you know, here's this thing that happened that means that this was impossible. Like, every claim about Thomas Jefferson fathering Sally Hemings's children, one of them, all of them, none of them. He fathered none of them. There is no evidence. The only evidence they have, and the reason why the claims got started in the first place, is because Thomas Jefferson was smeared about this contemporaneously, right? Like in a 1902 presidential campaign, his opponents brought this up. But if you go to the Monticello website, they say it's an absolute fact. There's no evidence. But most historians agree that Jefferson was the father of one or more of Sally's children. Well, they believe lies. They have no reason to believe that. They have no justification for believing that. It's never been proven. It's never even been convincingly argued. Again, there is a commission that investigated this for an entire year. And again, it says, the overwhelming majority of us believe that it is very unlikely that he fathered any children by Sally Hemings. Certainly, there were far more likely suspects, including his brother Randolph and their sons, for the paternity of Esten and perhaps other Hemings children. Quote, I am a Hamiltonian. I am always delighted to hear the worst about Thomas Jefferson. So this is one of the scientists that was on the commission saying, actually, I came into this very excited to prove it was correct. He says, I was a Hamiltonian. I didn't like Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson was simply not guilty of the charge. You know, I wanted it to be true, but I looked into it. Turns out it wasn't. The Scholar's 401-page report with a 1,428 footnotes and an 18-page summary disclosed numerous misrepresentations and at least one doctored historical document being used by scholars advocating Jefferson's paternity. While we may never know with certainty who fathered Sally Hemings' children, it is significant that these distinguished scholars, several of whom entered the project as Jefferson's critics and believers in the Hemings story, concluded after a year of careful research that the charge was almost certainly false. It is by far the most comprehensive treatment of this issue. And then you can find the link to the actual Scholars Commission report, which I encourage you to read because literally they systematically go through every single claim made and they disprove it. That's kind of weird, right? In 1998, these claims are made. By 2001, a thorough examination of the claim has been conducted. The you know, outrageous, unqualified, unjustified claims of the DNA tester and their, you know, speculations somehow has been installed as the truth, the absolute truth, the truth Monticello itself will tell you. While meantime, the actual big committee put together to investigate it came to the exact opposite conclusion. How does that happen, I wonder?
Thanks for having me. Before I start, wanted to pitch a couple of the products there for the listeners. The bovine colostrum's been fantastic. My mom had tremendous results, similar to the results your mom had with her hair and skin. Methylene blue, the mental clarity, the focus has been amazing. I just found that I just needed to up the dose a little bit from the recommendation, and then that really hit. So definitely helps to support the broadcast. Alex, the reason you're so successful and the reason so many people chime in is because you have the best guests. That does include Victor Boot, but I will reference the legendary Gerald Celente. What does he say time after time? When there's nothing left, they take us to war.
The bovine colostrum is incredible. The methylene blue, you fund us. You're our funders, not the Israelis or the Muslims or the Russians or the U.S. government. You fund us at thealexjonesstore.com. And the new news site for all the feeds and articles is alexjoneslive.com. And on Rumble, rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. We'll be right back.
Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone.
All right, welcome back, folks. We got some new Trump clips out from an interview he did. We'll go to those in just a second. I do want to finish this video from Jon Stewart. I want to see where they go from this. I mean, they've gone from acknowledging the reality of globalization destroying the communities of working class whites to then somehow relating that to the fact that white people don't trust the universities. And then as an example of that, he talks about the abject lie, the blood libel of Sally Hemings, which is kind of ironic because most people, I think, believe these claims because they've heard them over and over. Because since 1998, it has been asserted as fact that Thomas Jefferson raped his slaves and fathered Sally Hemings's children. Never proven. Never remotely proven. In fact, the major scientific inquiry into it disproved all of the claims. And yet this guy is using this claim as an example of, I guess, the importance of universities doing this type of work. I mean, once again, he's like, and it took us a long time to convince Monticello. I mean, think about this. You've got the organization, the legacy community that is preserving the memory and celebrating the history of Thomas Jefferson. And they're being bombarded. They're being harassed by academics, by university chairs and professors who have this lie. They have this precious little story that they want to tell about Thomas Jefferson that's totally untrue, that ruins his reputation, that smears him as the worst thing you can possibly be two times over, slave owner and a rapist. And they like, and he's like, you have no idea how hard it was for us to get Monticello on board with this. Well, it was a lie. It's shocking that they eventually got on board with it. It's actually like a condemnation of their legitimacy as an organization. They should be removed because even now, if you go to Monticello grounds, you go to Thomas Jefferson's home that he built, designed with his own hands, slept in with his family, they will sit there and bold-faced lie to you, calling him a rapist slave owner, disrespecting and dishonoring his entire memory. And that's what they use to talk about the importance of the university system. Do you understand? Do you understand what these people have done to us, who these people are, and that they cannot even conceive of reality? Like, I don't know how else to put it, but like, they're so far gone. They're so lost. They're just like desperately, like, demanding that we all believe lies, and then they're like shocked and dismayed at the state of humanity when we don't believe their lies. And they are so genuine in this feeling. They're not putting an act on. So I want to go back to this video. I want to see what else they say, since they're bringing up the blood libel smear that they pushed against one of our founding fathers as an example of somewhere where the trust in universities is really having negative effects. Well, let's keep watching.
Of the Sally Hemings case, and that took time to convince Monticello and the country of its truth.
But there's a resentment there.
Yeah.
Because of its truth. There's a resentment.
Well, that's
a resentment
true
because of its truth.
Annette, yeah. Or towards you for even bringing up that truth.
Telling us the painful stories. Don't tell us those painful stories. Make us feel good again.
Make us feel good again. Let me pause it. Let me pause real quick. I just have one comment to make here. It's a lie, you psychopaths. This is like totally crazy. They spread a blood libel smear against Thomas Jefferson. And when you don't believe it, they're like, well, you know, this is all, oh, don't tell us uncomfortable truths. We want the comfortable lie. No, we want the comfortable truth. No, we want the truth. You are telling lies. You are deliberately smearing Thomas Jefferson because you're bad people with bad intentions. And look, he might believe that Sally Hemings was a rapist, in which case he's an idiot and he's wrong. But I don't even believe that he does. I think he believes it is an important thing to understand. I don't think he believes it's true. I think he thinks it's important that it's accepted. It's a lie. Let's go back to the liars complaining that you stupid rubes, you damn goyim, you won't listen to our lies and believe them. How dare you? Submit to our lies. Let's watch.
And now the white working class is saying, no, it's not the woke that are the victim. It's us. We're actually the victims.
Well, there's the racial story that's involved in this as well. I mean, the white working class, you know, beloved of news organizations, so forth, the diner stories and
forth.
Sure.
They're seen representing real Americans in some ways. Yeah. And this is sort of a way of saying that black people are kind of not real Americans.
Well, explicitly so. And as even the heritage Americans.
Yeah, exactly. And the truth is, most African-American people are descended from people who came here in the 1700s, in the early 1700s. We would certainly be people who have a history here for very, very, you know, for centuries. And yet we're not real Americans. So when you think about when people are told that the government, and that's the other thing that they is not only mistrusting universities, the government is the problem.
Yeah.
So we're an industrialized country that doesn't have a social welfare system that it approaches any place else.
We just don't have it for white people.
In our sort of people who have comparable types of societies. And so, and that is social scientists suggest is because of the racial question here, is that people don't want those people's children or those people to have, you know, to be helped in any way.
And to have what we have. Yeah. Okay. Oh my God. All right. I don't even know where to go with that. I mean, I guess the question is, what is a real American? It's not a racial thing. Okay. We're told it's not a racial thing. So I guess that would make it a creedal thing, right? It's a creed. It's a belief system. Here's the problem. You just brought up how whether you intended to or not, admitted that you, hate our founding fathers and want to smear them and want to believe that they were rapists and slave owners. So, I mean, if a real American isn't decided by your ancestry, your heritage in this country, it sounds like it also has nothing to do with your love of this country, your belief in this country, your belief in the things that this country stands for and the founding fathers and the ideas that they created. It sounds like you hate that stuff. Sounds like you just hate America and Americans. It sounds like you want their stuff and that you're mad that white Americans, who you admitted in the beginning of that clip, have had their lives destroyed by no fault of their own, by forces much more powerful than them in the government and in universities and in corporations working together to deprive possibilities, to deprive white working class people of jobs and of well-being and of safety. You're mad that you can't also rob them to pay your co-ethnics for a social safety net, a welfare safety net, as if the vast majority of A, black Americans, B, illegal and legal immigrants all live off of welfare, all enjoy enormous welfare benefits that are all paid for by the one demographic in this country that pays more in taxes than it receives in benefits, that is the white people. They're mad they can't steal it. So like, this to me is, you know, it's just a glimpse into the madness of the leftists. This is what's going on in their mind. It's all just like insanity. It's all just like insane beliefs that just are completely inversions of reality. It's all just, they don't trust us, but we keep lying to them. we want to take their stuff. And they don't want us to take their stuff, but that makes them bad. Yes, we made them lose all of their jobs because of the policies that they support, but somebody must have tricked them into not supporting us. Like, it's just pure unrelenting madness. I can't possibly imagine having brains like that. I can't possibly imagine being these people. Like John Stewart there sagely nodding. Well, like Sally Hemming. Yes, exactly like Sally Hemming. What? You were talking about globalism. You have no idea what he's even talking about. What is the connection to Sally Hemings? You just hate white people. you hate white people. You want to disparage their history, our history. You want to eradicate our presence in the country that our ancestors founded. You want to smear our heroes as the worst thing you can possibly imagine. You want to criticize us for not believing you without proof about the blood libels you smear about our people. You want to replace us, but we're supposed to accept that and be happy for it. Because apparently we're supposed to be saddled with some sort of guilt on the basis of claims that are abject lies and smears and blood libels. So, what? What are you talking about? That's all I have to say about that. What the hell are you talking about? Sally Hemings was never touched by Thomas Jefferson. And we have too much welfare. We have far too much welfare. We have far too much leniency with our universities when these are the type of people that they're churning out. And it really is like white people have got to realize that you're being victimized and not to be victims, not to have a victim mentality where you perceive, you know, everything in the world as being done to you. Right. We're not taking the Black Lives Matter tactic of, you know, black people get lower grades. Let's get rid of grades. That type of concept. But like, it's a whole different situation when everyone in power is constantly talking about how they're attacking you, are constantly explaining the ways in which your life is being made worse by their policies, constantly smearing your heroes, constantly undercutting your history and your country, when they're literally tearing down your statues, when they're literally teaching your children to hate themselves, when they're literally letting people out of prison because they target you, when you're sent to jail for words, but they're not sent to jail despite committing violence. We got to wake up to this and understand that we don't have to take it. And everything they justify their hatred of are lies. And in every instance throughout history, it has not been horrible white people abusing everybody else. Actually, for the last like 200 years, it's been nothing but white people rolling over and still being blamed, stopping slavery and then being blamed for slavery. It's like, what the hell? At a certain point, you gotta stop listening to these people. You got to take your own side and you got to recognize that there's a reason they need to lie about all of this. There's a reason none of their claims have any validity or virtue or value whatsoever. It's all lies. It's all crap. And when you actually look at history, and you can go back as far as you want, it really is annoying. It really is annoying. MU refuses to remove Thomas Jefferson statue despite student pressure. It reminds me, because this was before I worked at InfoWars. I was getting in an argument on Facebook with somebody. And maybe it wasn't before. So I started working in 2017 for InfoWars. I thought it was before that, but maybe I did work for them. But regardless, it was early on, and Trump was a figure, so it must have been during his first administration, but it was when Trump made the statement where he said, they're tearing down statues of Robert E. Lee, but they're going to tear down statues of Thomas Jefferson and George Washington next. And a leftist friend of mine on Facebook was like, this is ridiculous. This guy's just a racist. He wants us to celebrate slave owners. and whatever else. And I went in and commented and just said, no, he's exactly right. If Robert E. Lee is worthy of tearing down his statue, what's the difference between him and George Washington or Thomas Jefferson? If the bad thing is that he owned slaves, well, so did they. So how is this a big leap? They are going to start tearing down Thomas Jefferson and George Washington statues. And once again, like so many instances we see, when first confronted with reality, leftists will deny it because they recognize how insane it is, right? The leftist that was posting that thought it was ridiculous that people would want to tear down Thomas Jefferson or George Washington statues. Like, he genuinely believed that's a crazy thing to say. That's fear-mongering. This is Trump taking a reasonable position and making it sound ridiculous for his own ends. Like, I think he really believed that. And then in this thread where I'm arguing with him, going back and forth and just being right about everything and explaining that, no, this is about being anti-American. This is about tearing down. Actually, really, it's about tearing down the things the founding fathers gave us, like human rights and freedom and the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. And that's what they want to destroy. So they're associating that with white supremacy. All of this was obvious from the beginning. And actually in that thread, somebody else comments under me, not understanding, like they misread what I was saying. And so they agreed, they thought they were agreeing with me, but basically, like, we're in this debate, me and this leftist are debating whether or not the same motive that would tear down a Robert E. Lee statue would lead to tearing down Thomas Jefferson and George Washington statues. And in this thread, leftists come in and go, yeah, we should tear down Thomas Jefferson and George Washington statues. And I just had to comment being like, so I'm right. So the leftist that originally posted it, talking about how ridiculous it was that Trump would make this warning, was just disproven right there. And I'm sure, I guarantee you, in the intervening years, now if you asked him, he'd say, yeah, we should tear down Thomas Jefferson and George Washington statues, even though he understood how ridiculous that would have been back in 2018 or whenever this happened. Their initial response is correct. The initial response of like, ooh, tearing down the statues of our founding fathers, that's kind of a dangerous place for our society to go. They understood that at first. But then you hit him with propaganda for a little longer and eventually it goes down. Biden and Democrats divided over Thomas Jefferson's legacy. I mean, we made up this lie about him raping slaves, so can we really honor him anymore? Can we really celebrate the father of our country, the writer of the Declaration of Independence, the small government champion whose brilliant, unparalleled genius in politics paved the way for our country to be the greatest, most powerful, most successful, most prosperous country in the history of the world? Should we really celebrate him? After all, we did make up this thing about him and Sally Hemings. We did come up with this retarded smear about him being a slave rapist. So, you know, maybe we should tear his statue down. Maybe. We go on and on. I could go on and on about the way in which this is happening to basically every, you know, historical figure in the West. I mean, some of the videos that we saw there, I mean, they're tearing down statues of Churchill. So, you know, there's nobody in our history that they like. You understand that? It's the fact that there are historical figures that they don't like, and they'll come up with any excuse. They tore down statues of Queen Victoria. In Canada, when they were protesting the residential school scandal, which might be the best example of this type of thing. In fact, maybe we should make a list. Maybe we should start to make a list, because there have been a lot. But I think these may be the top two, what would we call them? Just leftist lies about history, or, you know, whatever it is. Because Thomas Jefferson never did anything with Sally Hemings. Like, things that are accepted as just true on the face of it, you know? Things that, like, you will be called a liar for disagreeing with, even though there's no evidence. Yeah, Thomas Jefferson statue removed from City Hall 187 years later. The residential schools in Canada might be the craziest, right? They came up with this claim that there was a genocide at the residential schools, that all the residential schools had mass graves of all of the native indigenous children that they killed. This was accepted wholeheartedly with no reservation, despite there being absolutely zero evidence to it. But they at least said, we're going to find the evidence. So then they pay for a multi-million dollar survey of every residential school using the most high-powered, advanced scanning technology to look for any disturbed land that could possibly be a grave of any sort. And they found absolutely nothing. But guess what? Hundreds of churches burned in the ensuing protest. The statue of Queen Victoria was torn down in protest of the fantasy. They were protesting a story they made up. They were protesting a lie that they came up with and started telling in order to demonize the Canadian people, Canadian history, everything. They made this up. They lie about it. Then at least they actually did do the surveys. They actually did do the studies. They actually went and looked for graves. They found absolutely none of them. You know what they did next? They passed a law making it illegal in Canada to question the residential school genocide. These might be the two biggest. Those might be the two biggest and most flagrant and most outrageous lies that are just accepted as true by the left. And again, not even just accepted as true. In Canada, we've covered stories. People have gone to jail for saying the residential school genocide didn't exist, but it didn't exist, and there's never been any proof for it. And despite tens of millions of dollars dedicated to trying to find evidence for it, they've never found a single grave. A single grave. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, the crew. Crew just said, meanwhile, in 1998, the leftist media was very concerned about investigating the sexual impropriety of presidents. Not current presidents. Not presidents that were actively raping their interns. That is fine. That's fine, actually. We're going to smear a founding father over a DNA test that was inconclusive. But now it's established fact, folks. Beyond infuriating. Again, like, you want to talk about the information war. You want to talk about, like, long-term operations in the information war. And you want to talk about the power that the media has to spread these lies. Could you do it? Could you come up with a random smear? Like, could you go back and go look in the archives of newspapers from the early 1800s, find a smear that John Quincy Adams told about Alexander Hamilton that's obviously untrue, that has no basis in reality, that is an abject, obvious smear from a political opponent. Could you then somehow define Hamilton by that lie? Because that's what they achieved. That's what they did. Thomas Jefferson is now defined by the lie that they came up with, that they never proved. How do you do that? How do they achieve that? Why would they achieve it? Why would people accept it without question? Why would people who know better spread the smear? Why would people who are entrusted with preserving and safeguarding Thomas Jefferson's historical legacy submit themselves to the harassment and pestering of anti-white scumbags who are pushing a lie on them? Why can we not stand up for ourselves? Why can we not stick to the truth? Why can we not tell these people to go kick rocks when they come up with some obvious blood libel to smear our founding fathers? When they want to tear down our statues, why don't we not tear down our statues? I was going to say hang them instead, but I don't want to call for violence. I would never call for violence, but that is what was going through my mind. I just want to be honest about that.
Have the very best, strongest methylene blue from a medical grade company that produces it for medical firms. Instead of using radioactive iodine, you know, to track stuff before surgeries, they're more and more using methylene blue. So I told Bigley, I said, get me whatever the highest rated is. So they spent like 6 months and said, where is it? And they said, oh, this is a medical firm in Florida. They don't even sell this for human consumption, though it's great for that. And I'm like, okay, great. So some bottles of it came in, sat there about a week, because I'd taken methylene blue before, barely felt any energy, knew it was really good for your mitochondria. And, you know, so it's time to sell it. We're going to do it. Kennedy's promoting it. This is a year and a half ago, almost years ago. They're like, hey, boss, you know, it's coming out tomorrow. You got to cut the ads. I went, well, I haven't tried it yet. This better be good. And so the show ends, and I had a glass of iced tea, just like I do today. Okay? And I take one dropper and put it in the iced tea. And so I only drink half the iced tea. So I took half a dropper, and all of a sudden I'm like feeling warm and like electricity in my hands. I'd forgotten I'd taken it because I'm busy doing stuff at the show. And I go into the bathroom and I take my shirt off and I turned red. Not like hives, like I was, it was distributed. I'm already pretty tan. Tan good is a little bit Native American, the benefits of that. But I was like even redder and I was like, what is this? And I'm like, electricity. I go, oh, that's what people say methylene blue does if it's really good. And I was like, and I started feeling so good. I was like, this is kind of scary. And about an hour into it, I go, I hope this stops because it was getting too good. That happened to Derek. He took it and said, I'm scared to take it. I thought he was on acid. So it's psychoactive everything, okay? I mean, this is not a freaking game, okay? It skips the oxygenation process, two steps in the cells, and all this other wild stuff. And so my medical doctor 6-7 years ago, he went to wellness clinics all over the state. He's got like 5, 6, 7, 8 degrees. It's ridiculous. He said, and by the way, I want you to get methylene blue. It'll be USP grade. Just get it wherever. Just make sure it's USP grade, meaning it's, you know, medical grade. And I ordered it and tried it and really didn't feel any energy when, you know, but I'm sure it was good for me, but I'd forget to take it. So I was like, okay, everybody wants methylene blue. I know it's good. We'll get it. We'll sell it. You'll get the best. I take this and it is nothing like any methylene blue I ever took. I mean, it is strong. It's amazing. But just like Group told me with the pure atomic iodine that it would do great stuff with my skin, those liver spots I had, you can go back to shows 14, 15 years ago before Group came along and you can see those spots I had. They're gone, baby. Gone, literally gone. It's amazing. But within 2 weeks of taking the methylene blue, the guy I trained with was like, hey, are you on something? Did you get a steroid prescription or something? I was like, no. And he goes, well, what's going on? I mean, you're losing weight even quicker, and now you used to have trouble doing 10 pull-ups, and you just did 20. And man, you're like pushing like on the leg press twice what you were a month ago. What the hell's going on, dude? You're like glowing. And Sean Johnson told the story, and I said, it's methylene blue. He's a former Navy SEAL, Navy SEAL trainer, all that. He took it, gave his testimony about how within 30 minutes he was all zinned out and it was crazy and everything. This stuff really works. Now, when you first take it, you get the crazy effects psychologically. You always feel the energy some, but as it builds up, it's not even a tolerance. It's when your body hasn't had this, it really notices the difference. But the first time you take it, I say take a quarter dropper. Talk to your physician, too, because if you're on SSRIs or some other drugs, it'll make you jump off a building. I mean, people have taken methylene blue when they're on Prozac and they jump off buildings. Okay. That's rare. Usually women just pull their clothes off and start having orgies and stuff. I mean, I'm serious. Okay. I mean, like, you want to go cuckoo town, take this with SSRIs and you're going to cuckoo town because that's how strong this is. Okay. That's what this does. And we know it's good for you, but this is not a joke. Okay. I don't sell crap.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. Final segment of today's broadcast. Here on War Room Live, we're going to go to a couple new videos of Donald Trump. And actually, the crew... can. There's some new clips of J.D. Vance as well. There's one that I just saw that was him saying if everything is anti-Semitism is, nothing is. Right? You can't call everything anti-Semitism or else it loses its meaning. I'd like to respond to that. We'll do that in just a second. So one funny thing about all of this is like this whole, certainly the conflict with Israel, but really a lot of, you know, the left has gone so insane and their positions are so extraordinary now. It's become very easy to argue against them. And the case is obviously the same with Israel as well. And no joke, there are like certain accounts that are constantly kind of trying to like get one over on me. One of them is Insurrection Barbie, if y'all know that one. And the theory is it's not even a single person. It's like a group of people that run it. But clearly they're Israeli operatives and, you know, they're only interested in defending Israel. And you would think that if there's this like sort of highly coordinated, very popular, I mean, these people have a lot of followers. And you would think that like I'm scrolling through my notifications, maybe I said something a little bit extreme, a little outrageous, and I see there that they've responded or they've quote tweeted me. And you might think your reaction would be like, ooh, crap. Oh no. Ooh, what did they say? Oh no, they get one. But like literally anytime I see these people's icons, I like light up. I think it's so fun because they all, it's like they're teeing up a ball for me to hit out of the park. It's so fun. It's so fun seeing people that I just know are gonna, like they're, cause what I say is true. Like I don't really exaggerate that much. Maybe out of like comic effect or whatever. But like they're constantly, because I think what they do is they sort of operate as if like on the assumption, and maybe they really believe it, but like it's this assumption that like people that are anti-Israel like lie about Israel or something. I don't lie. I just don't. So it's like they think that they can like ask a poignant question and that you'll be like, oh no, but it's like, What do you think the answer is? I think you'll see what I mean. Kurt Schlichter. Schlichter is one of these. Kurt Schlichter thought he had a clever comeback to me. So what I said, I responded to Israel Foreign Ministry, who says, in the past 48 hours, Hezbollah killed 5 Israelis and injured 12. These are Hezbollah's systematic violations of the ceasefire, 17th through 18th of June. So what I said in response to that is, they are invading Lebanon and then complaining that the Lebanese are fighting back. Truly, they're the Carmelo Anthony of nations. They're the Carmelo Anthony of nations. And their supporters are the equivalent of Carmelo Anthony supporters. Like, that's really the way to think about this. Think about the Carmelo Anthony supporters. They don't think that he's innocent. They don't think that it was a misunderstanding. I don't think that he was actually under threat of his life and pulled out of knife in an act of desperation and is being attacked. They know what? They know that he walked into the tent. They know that he started the fight. They know that he stabbed a kid in the heart, murdered him, and they support him anyway. That's Israeli supporters too, folks. That's what this is. They can claim, this is racism. It's anti-Semitism. Oh, you just believe that because you're racist, so you're predisposed to believe that Carmelo Anthony was bad. No, we looked at the facts. You're the bad one. You're the aggressive one. You're the ones that started the fight and killed the people. It's you. It's actually you, and when we get it. Okay. So I respond that Israel is the Carmelo Anthony of nations. And then Kurt Schlichter, old Schlichter over here, thinks he's got a clever comment. Why did they invade Lebanon? Why did they invade Lebanon? I think the answer he's going for is, oh, well, because Hezbollah are firing rockets at them. Oh, darn it. Oh, darn it. You got me. I forgot about the fact that Hezbollah is terrorists. Oh, I forgot they have a right to defend themselves. You're so right, Kurt Schlichter. The answer, of course, is to Judaize it. They want to Judaize the Litani. That's the headline from Haaretz. Days ago, Judaize the Litani. Under cover of war, Israeli's right-wing camp pushes to expand borders and settle Lebanon. This is what I mean. They think they've got this clever thing. They think they've got this clever ability to be like, well, why are they invading Lebanon? Backing me into a corner where I have to admit that Hezbollah are the bad guys and that Israel isn't. They have got a reason to, if they don't, you know, invade Lebanon. I mean, they're forced to invade Lebanon. The poor, innocent Israelis being forced to kill everyone. They're really victims two times over. First, they get victimized when they let Hamas, the organization that they fund, attack their people. And then they do the Hannibal Directive and kill a bunch more. I mean, that was enough. But then they have the second victimization of having to take on the moral burden of killing everyone. And that is really, they're suffering. They're suffering and they deserve our sympathy. I'm glad I don't have to kill all these people, that they're doing it instead. They're taking on that burden like heroes. No, the reality is they're taking over Lebanon because they want it. That's actually what's happening. Judaize the Litani. That's why, Schlichter. That's why they're doing it. That's why they say they're doing it. That's their own statement in their own newspaper when asked why they're going to Judaize it. Here's the actual article. Judaize the Litany under the cover of war, under the cover of war, right? Now, not that this was actually what the war was about. This is just them being like, they're distracted by Gaza. Let's move in and take over Lebanon while everybody's distracted. Also, let's burn down the last Christian village in the West Bank settlements and then tell everybody that we're the protectors of Christianity in the Middle East. Let's trick everybody. In mid-war with Iran, what was once considered a far-fetched initiative has turned into a systematic campaign supported by lawmakers and the right-wing press, expansion of Israel's northern border as far as the Litani River. In June 2024, at the height of the war in the Gaza Strip, hundreds of right-wing activists gathered on Zoom to discuss how to protect themselves from Hezbollah's incursion. Oh, no, sorry, I made that part up. Sorry, no, it had nothing to do with Hezbollah. My mistake. Sorry, I thought from Kurt Schlichter's, insinuation, this... You would think this would be an article about how fearful they are of Hezbollah and how they need protection from the big bad terrorists. No, that's not what it says. Sorry, let me actually read it now. To discuss a new border for Israel. Oh, that's what they were discussing. Okay, they were discussing how to aggressively take over and annex parts of another sovereign nation. Okay. To Judaize it. To kick out all of the non-Jews and to put Jews there. To take it over, to settle it, to colonize it, to ethnically cleanse it out of a war of choice and aggression. Nothing to do with their safety, their protection, terrorism of any sort. They're the terrorists. Does that make sense? The first Lebanon conference, it was called, barely aroused public interest or serious media coverage. The event featured a speech by Dr. Haggai Ben Artzi, the prime minister's brother-in-law, who told the participants that the Lebanon border is artificial, asserting that the Galilee extends as far as the Litani River in Lebanon. Yeah, that's why they want to take it over. So they're taking it over. And apparently if you want to fight them, you're the bad one. You're the terrorist and you deserve it. The group's logo consists of a cypress tree, the icon of Lebanon, and a Star of David. Its founders pull no punches about their aims. In order to triumph over the Iranian evil and in order to stabilize the state of Israel for generations, we must get to Lebanon. Southern Lebanon must be under Israeli control. According to the Hebrew website, which also suggests a variety of activities for its supporters, distributing t-shirts, setting up information booths, and holding Zoom talks under the heading Lebanon in the Living Room, a nod at Memory in the Living Room, an event in which Holocaust survivors tell their stories in private homes. Until recently, Uri Safon was considered no more than a curiosity, as was also the case with another group called the Bashan Pioneers, which aims to settle Jews in northern Syria when it was created last year. So again, I mean, we've spent enough time talking about Israel and their relentless evil and then lying about the evil and trying to take over places and then lying about trying to take over places and then blaming you and calling you terrorists for trying to stop them from taking over your homeland. I think we've talked about that enough. I think everybody understands who these people are and what their ultimate aims are. I just think it's funny. The Kurt Schlichter and others. It's a very similar thing I've seen over and over again. Why are they invading Lebanon? You want to talk about that? Yeah, I do. They're bad. They're evil people. They're trying to take over land where families have lived for thousands of years, where people have ancestry that goes back, certainly beyond the creation of Israel, certainly beyond the division of Palestine under the Ottomans. I mean, they've been there for thousands of years. Promised to us, the Israelis dreaming of settling South Lebanon. Because they're so scared of the terrorists. All right. Let's talk more about Israel. Let's talk more about the way in which they control our country and are driving us all insane with their relentless lies. We'll go to 56 first. This is the president of the United States, Donald Trump, talking about what moves he has here between Iran and Israel to actually open up the Strait of Hormuz or do anything else he wants. Let's watch.
Think of it. Oh, why aren't you tougher? The only way I can get tougher is if I go in there for another 2 or 3 weeks and continue to bomb the hell out of them, right? But what does that get us? The Strait of Hormuz will not be open. Let's say I did that. Let's say I decided to do that. It was a decision I had to make. So right now our stock market is through the roof. The oil prices are tumbling. The oil prices are practically the same as they were before I started. The big difference is that Iran will never have a nuclear weapon. They're never going to have a nuclear weapon, okay? It's very clear and very simple. But if I were hitting them right now, when you stopped, it's if we're not going to put boots on the ground, okay? I mean, you don't want boots on the ground, right? If we're not going to put boots on the ground, probably the same people, you know, they go deep into the caves. They're called granite caves. They're very powerful. They go deep in, and then when we stop, they'll come up and they'll probably be the same leader. So nothing. Okay, ready? When I knocked them out, we knocked them out so powerfully, we would right now have the Hormuz Strait would be totally closed. It would have mines all over it, and it would have missiles flying over billion-dollar ships, and those ships will never sail. We wouldn't have oil for months. As long as you're dropping bombs, that thing is automatically closed because those ships cost $500 to $1 billion apiece. They're not going to be sailing with rockets. So just to finish, I just looked. Oil is tumbling. Their ships are roaring out of there. They want to go home. They want to drop. They're all full with oil. This is a gusher. I mean, this, we have 700 or 800 ships are leaving. But if I attack them, none of those ships are leaving. The stock market is way up, way, way up. You know, the stock market is up over the last 4 or 5 days when it looks like we're going to make a deal. Stock market's up thousands of points. Everybody's richer. Now, would you rather have that or be like some stupid people? I'll be honest with you. I lost respect for some people because—
Who'd you lose respect?
I don't want to mention the names.
Oh, you can.
But, you know, hardliners, oh, you got to take them out yet.
Well, what are you going to—
Let me tell you. And plus, I'm not looking to kill people.
Trump tells the Axios show there are no limits to his power after Iran war. I don't know. I mean, what has changed in the situation? Everything he explained there was true 4 days after the war began. 4 days after the war began, they realized their decapitation strikes didn't work. Their agitation of the Iranian populace to rise up went nowhere. So what have we been doing for the last 105 days? What have we been doing? What has changed? What has this been in pursuit of? Because I've been literally saying that exact thing. He's like, we're not going to put boots on the ground, so we can't do anything other than bomb them. Bombing them hasn't worked and won't work because they go into bunkers. I mean, Trump sounds like me 2 months ago. What the hell? What? Why did this change? He's like, I've lost respect for some people. You should lose more respect for more people, Trump. You respect these people too much still. Even if you say you've lost respect for them, you should probably, like, hate them by now. Like, forget not respecting them. You should understand now. And it really is not a matter of respect. You know, you say you lose respect for somebody who's, like, wrong, who is stupid. These people are evil. These people got you to do stuff that they knew wasn't going to work, that they knew was wrong. Forget not respecting these people. You should understand these people are your enemies. They don't respect you. It's, you know, okay. I feel like it's sort of a constant here. It's like, okay, we get to learn from the authorities that, hey, did you know Anthony Fauci created the virus and then lied about it? What? Did you know that the war with Iran had no possibility of succeeding because we're not putting boots on the ground and the bombing campaign can't possibly bring about a change in circumstance, a change in regime or anything of the sort? What? I can't believe it. It's crazy. It's crazy. We just have to sit here and pretend like this all wasn't obvious from the beginning. We have to sit here and act like we didn't know. I honestly cannot rationalize what's going on. using the facts on the ground as they stand now. Using assumptions in place, it's actually very easy to understand what's going on. The assumption that we have in place is that, as we've been saying the entire time, the Iran war, my assumption was that they knew the Strait of Hormuz was going to be closed, which is why they launched the war. See, the assumption I'm running with is that I'm not some sort of genius. I'm not privy to information that is unavailable to the likes of the President of the United States. So I'm a little bit suspicious that I could figure this out, but nobody in the Trump administration could. I don't believe that. Just like I don't believe that Anthony Fauci ever thought it was a naturally occurring virus, because it never was, because it had artificial furin cleavage sites that only come about as a consequence of gain of function. That the virus and the lab that it came out of was doing studies on COVID virus, enhancing them with gain of function, and also a rather extensive history of major safety violations that had almost led to viruses leaking out of that many times before. What the hell? This is like the most frustrating. I know our leadership is going to lie to us. I know that the government is not going to tell the truth. But every day I talk to people in my family, at the store, online, whatever it is, they seem so smart. They seem so intelligent. They seem like they have an IQ. They seem like they think for themselves. And yet I'm the only one I know. I'm the only person I ever talk to that can see the forest for the trees, that just knows what's obvious and right in front of all of us. Like, how are people not awake yet? How are people not fully comprehending what's going on here? Does anybody, maybe we should go back in time. Maybe I need to go back and look at like coverage of the Iran war early on. Cause I know what I was saying. What I was saying as soon as it happened was, this is not going to work. They're going to shut down the Strait of Hormuz. We have no way of opening it. We have no way of decapitating their leadership. They have a mosaic strategy that defeats it. They have a lot of ballistic missiles that we cannot stop. We're going to waste a lot of our ammunition trying to protect ourselves and our bases, which we're not going to be able to protect, which they are going to destroy. We're going to lose this conflict. We should get out right now. 4 days. 4 days into the conflict, I was saying, now is the time to cut this off. Now is the time to say, whoops, we tried, it failed, let's cut it now so we don't, you know, go down the road of further damage. They've depleted the strategic oil reserves. They have failed in their attempt to do anything positive in Iran. Trump cannot put a muzzle or a leash on Israel, despite the fact that we run everything for them. Who thought anything else would happen? Who lied to you? Who told you that Iran would fall? Who told you this was for our benefit? Who told you that we'd be taking their oil and this was a masterstroke? Who told you that this was all about actually we're doing this against China and China is suffering hugely because of this and this is geostrategically brilliant? Who lied to you like that? I never did. I never told you those lies. A lot of people out there were told those lies. Here's what you do. Anybody that told you anything like that, understand they're your enemy. Whether they're lying or whether they're stupid, stop listening to them. And that includes President Trump. And that includes Bibi Netanyahu. And hell, that includes J.D. Vance. Because he was toeing the line as well in the early days of this conflict. All of this is obvious. All of this is so unbelievably obvious. And that's why it's so frustrating trying to talk about this stuff and just being literally years ahead of everybody and just having to sit here and just watch everybody else believe endless lies and then fall for it over and over and then come around to what we were saying the entire time, but never give us any credit. Never look into how we knew this or what the purpose of the lies were in the first place. Here's J.D. Vance talking about anti-Semitism in a way that is shockingly reminiscent of everything we've been saying about the drive to criminalize anti-Semitism and to conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. For the love of God, if we had just been listened to early on, none of this would be an issue. Let's go to J.D. Vance.
And so I do think that sometimes, you know, advocates of Israel make, or pro-Israel people in the United States make two critical mistakes. One, on the one hand, is not delineating between America's interests and Israeli interests, because they're not always the same. But the second is always conflating criticism of a particular government with Jew hatred. Because if everything is Jew hatred, then nothing is Jew hatred. I actually think Jew hatred is very bad, which is why I think we have to be very careful about not calling every, it's kind of like how progressives for 20 years called everything racist. And if everything's racism, nothing is racism. And we have to be very careful not to, you know, in order to serve a certain foreign policy objective, try to criticize somebody as anti-Semitic when they're just not.
Yeah, I completely agree with all that. And I think that distinction is important. However, from my vantage point, it seems to me like the bigger problem is I don't know exactly how I would describe it in a way that would be charitable, but almost like Israel derangement syndrome, going beyond, okay, yeah, we don't like Israeli policies. We don't think that we should put the priorities of any country first. Completely agree with that. That's fine. But the obsession that some people have, would say on the right, with blaming all of their problems on Israel, all of their disagreements with Trump on some secret Israeli influence.
It's not secret.
And I'm not saying all of those people hate every Jewish person, but it seems to get there really fast. I see that more prominently on the right than I see true Israel first kind of obsession that you
Shut up, lady. All right. I don't want to listen to her anymore. Israel derangement syndrome. It's when you keep seeing videos of decapitated bloody babies killed by Israel, and you somehow connect that to the actions of Israel. It's about this idea, this you're imagining this weird secret connection between Donald Trump and Israel. It's not like it's out in the open. It's not like everything Israel wants, they absolutely get immediately. And any time we even politely ask that they restrain their behavior, they do the opposite instead. It's not like it's a constant, ever-flowing series, a stream, a deluge of examples over and over again of not just Israel's control of America, but what they do with that control, the relentless evil they're able to commit forever about everything. But the headline there, by the way, is J.D. Vance comes out strongly against the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, whose entire purpose is to conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism so that the state of Israel can operate with impunity and criminalize its critics. That's the point of the IHRA. That's the point of the anti-Semitism bills that are being passed, is to establish that, because that's the useful thing for Israel to wield against its critics. You call them anti-Semitic, and then you codify that into law, and then you punish them in violation of the First Amendment. If you're against that, J.D. Vance, you might want to stop your administration implementing it in every federal office. That would be a good start, because you're right, in part.
It took them 2 years to do it. When Bigley came on as our sponsor, now the owner of the All Options Network and the main backer, I said, I want gravity-fed filters. I sent them the test for previous sponsors, and I said, these guys fell off. Their quality wasn't as good. I got rid of them. This happens to these companies. There's only out of more than 50 gravity-fed companies, three or four that have the very best filters that cut everything out. They're stainless steel, and they start cutting the quality for whatever reason. I said, I want the highest-rated stainless steel. I want a clone of these products, but even better, and I want filters rated this high or higher. They went out, took them 2 years, they did it. This is something everybody needs, everybody wants. There's a giant market of folks that know how wonderful gravity-fed filters are and know what quality is. We have all the tests published on the site. It's the best. There are companies selling filters that the stainless steel isn't as nice, anywhere close, and the filters aren't even the highest rated. They're selling the damn things for $400. They're selling units similar to ours, aren't even as good, for $500 retail, discounting at $400. These babies are $300 and even lower for VIP members. There is very small markup. The markup is not even 100% in these, okay? And when you're VIP, it's even lower. That is the best deal. This is a home run. This is the best. This is going to help hire new crew on top of the crew, extra crew. It's going to help get new reporters and hosts and the new network getting completed with all the equipment stuff. I mean, this is a big investment here. We're rebuilding our operations. We can't do it without you. So your word of mouth for the show, AlexJonesLive.com, getting the free app, sharing that with others where they can get it, AlexJonesApp.com, following us on X at Real Alex Jones, following us on Rumble at Rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShow Live. That's all critical in telling others to do that. Your word of mouth, your prayer is king, but getting these products is also critical. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you because we want you to love it and be impressed with it so we have a relationship with you.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.